Hello and welcome back to the Cosmic Library, where you can read the greatest stories in all of the multiverse. I am Jeremy.
I'm Joanna.
And I am Jesse.
We are doing this show in conjunction with Second Union. For more of the latest headlines in entertainment, please go to our website at wearesecondunion.com. It's the beginning of a year. I'm allowed a mistake or two.
Okay, only one.
Now, we've been on break for a while because of the holidays. How have you guys been? Happy New Year.
I survived 2020. Heck yeah.
I actually got a little bit sad. I began the year with the first person I personally knew passing away from COVID.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I managed to keep everything incidental up until Saturday. So, That was a heck of a thing. And it turns out the guy I knew was semi-famous, too.
Huh?
I just knew he liked to cosplay the guy who was the massive, like, Warcraft dork in South Park.
Oh.
And
I saw that headline.
Yeah, it was one of those cases where I'd seen him in costume. I didn't realize I'd met him, like, out of costume. Because he shaved his head into that shape. It's not like it's naturally like that. So by the time I knew him, he looked like a different person to me. So there was that. Other than that, I've just been reading comic books and catching up, and the news is actually thick over the last couple of weeks. It turns out everybody's been busy, I guess, since conventions have not happened in the last 9 months.
Wow, that long.
Yeah. How about you two? How have you been?
Doing okay-ish.
Okay.
Living life on the wild side. I mean, I did travel home for Christmas. I mean, taking all safety precautions.
Yeah, but you went to Florida.
Yeah, and I tried to hold my breath the entire time. Did not work. Did not run into Florida Man, luckily.
Okay, but holding your breath the entire time, isn't that basically the Florida school system?
Yeah, basically. Public school system. No. Yeah, that was an interesting experience. I don't miss traffic out there. Oof.
Oh, yeah. I can relate.
Mm-hmm. But you can.
Yeah. I mean, I canceled all of my December plans. You know, my wife and my youngest are still in Central California, whereas I'm in Southern with the older two. I canceled my plans to do, like, social media stuff with a couple friends. This has been the quietest I've ever been for a holiday. And I've spent a couple of them alone, so this is really bizarre. But I am eager for things to restart. I do not like having 3 weeks off saved up at work.
Yep.
That is uncomfortable. Jesse, how about you?
I was keeping a mental record of all the things interesting I thought I could talk to you guys about over the weeks we've been off. And okay. I've forgotten all of them, except for one thing and how much I really regret buying Cyberpunk 2077.
You didn't.
Oh, no.
You did not.
I did on a whim.
For which system?
I figured I was playing on a PC, so I won't get as many problems. I don't have as many problems.
Not as many, but they're still amazing.
I have a broken quest, which has 6 different parts that don't work anymore, and the gameplay loop I have played on 5 other games.
So we are stuck in the Matrix.
I am bored.
I'm sorry. I did not expect to know somebody who actually owned the game after all the early reviews came out.
Yeah, Steve owns it too.
Oh.
Yeah, but he beat the game and he's playing with all kinds of builds, getting on a power trip with the way you could build your characters.
Oh, so. I see. Yeah. Yeah, but our mutual friend likes to live vicariously through video games. That is, like, his complete escape and purpose for being. You know, I once showed him Horizon Zero Dawn. At about 8 p.m., I woke up the following morning at about 6, and he was a third of the way through the game.
Yep, and he eventually bought over here. Can't wait for it. He's, you know, saving up to buy a PS5 so he can play the next game in the series.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saved up for a PS5. That money's still sitting there. I'm not sure I'm going to see one till March or April at this rate.
I dismissed that game originally because I didn't think it was that interesting gameplay, but I realized, like, the gameplay loop is far more involved than what I was doing in Cyberpunk, which is like if you played Skyrim or or any other game like that. You played Cyberpunk.
Okay, that's interesting to know. Yeah, you would think Horizon Zero Dawn would be very similar, but the gameplay mechanics on it are somehow very clean, despite all the things you can do in it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't expect that. It's very easy to work with a controller. It's not like you need to be an octopus to make anything work.
And the game goes out of the way, to tell you how all the mechanics work in game, in story, because you go actually have submissions to, figure out how these machine things work.
So it's actually very cool, and it's still one of the best visual feasts I've had this side of God of War. The game is gorgeous.
Yeah, that I had heard.
But outside that, I've been reading stories, and there have been some massive developments in the last couple of weeks as far as major character stories. But we'll get through that after the news, because this week, because of the holidays, we didn't actually have a reading assignment. So once we're done with the news, we're going to catch up over the last couple of weeks of stories as we understand them anyway. But we will start with Marvel Comic News. This is where we talk about the news and characters of the House of Mouse and what they have in the upcoming months. And the first story actually has to do with a story that started about a week ago. The Enter the Phoenix storyline has begun. And Newsarama sat down for a couple minutes with Jason Aaron before the story started, and he actually brought up a little bit of a point we've been discussing on and off since they really teased this event. And he brings up the troubled legacy that the Avengers have with the Phoenix and the X-Men specifically.
Yeah, I know.
The last time they all met over this was the Avengers versus X-Men story that at by the end of it saw the Phoenix dissipated, mutants returning to the world, and Cyclops in jail, if you recall. But according to Newsarama, they said, "You brought up Avengers versus X-Men, which centered on the two teams fighting over the Phoenix Force. Last time we spoke, we talked about Jonathan Hickman's then burgeoning X-Men line, and you hinted that the X-Men and Avengers would cross paths again. We've seen Wolverine and Jean Grey show up in the pages of Avengers on the trail of the Phoenix Force already. How will the X-Men factor in here? Could this be the start of something bigger between the Avengers and X-Men?" And Aaron responds with, quote, "For one thing, Wolverine is a big part of it. And of course AVX comes up. Enter the Phoenix deals with a legacy of Avengers versus X-Men and the current situation with the X-Men. That's all very much a part of this through Wolverine. I wanted someone from the X-Men represented in the story, but again, this is also about doing something new with the Phoenix, not having it go back to Jean Grey or one of the other characters we've seen become the Phoenix host in the past, but something new. A lot of the story is about showing how all different characters from around the Marvel Universe wield the power and how they'd be the Phoenix, and through that, one of them will emerge from this arc as the all-new Phoenix." Unquote.
Whoa.
So to me, that pretty much bumps Namor and Wolverine right out of the list.
Yeah.
Even though they are a part of this event. So somebody is coming out of this as the host of the Phoenix for Marvel Comics.
So what was the list of characters that we saw, getting inhabited by the Phoenix?
You know, we saw about eight different character teases, but I will tell you that when we get into talking about what we've missed over the last few weeks, there's a list of approximately 16 to 20 characters that are involved in this event.
Dude.
And it is hyper personal. It kind of, just when I thought I had a grip on it reading the first issue, in the last couple pages, it threw me a curve I was not expecting. Which is good, but it's still a bit befuddling. Speaking of befuddling, while we were gone, Marvel Comics announced that Spider-Man is getting a new costume.
I saw that.
Really?
Yeah, and Spider-Man's last big costume change was the infamous black costume, which some people instantly hated, while others, it had kind of a cult following, which is why Venom was eventually created. And Spider-Man, other than his big time phase where he just took his suit and armored it up a bit, he really hasn't had a big aesthetic change to his costume. This latest thing they're doing? I know it's part of a story. It's interesting. And you're going to hear me say something rare about something new. I hope it's not permanent.
Really?
I've seen this thing.
Yeah,
I
sent you guys the image. It is a lot of white and blue with some gray accents and orange running lights in the spider symbol and these bizarre orange lenses in the eyes.
It's interesting, but I don't like it.
I am a two sides of this. I don't think it's terrible, but I also think it feels like some DeviantArt OC.
You know, as
Right.
I look at this and I think as an overall aesthetic, it's not bad. It's kind of interesting. The
Yeah,
problem
and I
is,
agree.
it's not a Spider-Man thing. That's not
It's
it
not
doesn't cross that
horrible,
bridge in my
just.
mind.
I think the fact that they still kept the same kind of a suit pattern between the red and the blue is what really kind of does it makes it look like a copy.
To me, it doesn't look like a copy. It looks like Peter Parker forgot to put his costume on a new android he created.
That or he forgot to filter the Fantastic Four colors.
Now, this thing is supposed to make its first appearance in Amazing Spider-Man 63, which is going on sale in March. And I've seen the setup where it appear. Oh no, 62. Is it 62 or 63?
So 63 on the image you gave us.
He'll put on the suit with unrevealed attributes in March in Amazing Spider-Man 61, and number 62 is going to pit him versus the Kingpin. See, the Kingpin just appeared in a recent storyline with Norman Osborn. The two are working together with Spider-Man to try and take down the Kindred entity, which has been harassing him for months, almost a year, I think. Who,
Interesting.
by the way, is Harry Osborn.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if this costume is like his spider armor, where he's putting on something that has particular attributes to deal with something specific. I don't know if this is supposed to be his new permanent costume. I don't know if this is something he's temporarily wearing and in 6 months he's gone back to the webs. They really haven't said what the purpose of this thing is, other than it has some kind of special abilities. According to Dustin Weaver, quote, "The design was really a collaborative effort between Nick Spencer, editor Nick Lowe, and I. They reined in the weirder and more techie features I was bringing and helped create something that I think is simple and both futuristic and classical. I can't wait to see Patrick Gleason really bring it to life," unquote.
No, he's
So
not
it's
wrong.
my question is, they've confirmed that it's Spider-Man's and not like a multiverse other Spider-Man.
Correct, this is Peter Parker.
Okay.
It is not my thing. I mean, if it was on a number of different characters, I'd probably be okay with the overall aesthetic, but
Yeah,
it's
and I totally
bizarre.
agree with you 100%, but damn.
Yeah, it's just not spidey enough.
Well, I'm also not looking at his, web shoes, and they're three nodules.
Well, ever since his big time phase, Spider-Man has gotten a lot more varied with his webs. That was when he brought in things like taser webs and started to use the impact webbing that Ben Parker used. So I don't know if this is an aspect of that. Maybe this is one of those suits that's supposed to bring together the entirety of his arsenal.
Just could be the start of him making his own different spider suits, kind of like Iron Man in his different armors.
Oh, I pray not. Iron Man, just stop doing that.
Right, please.
Meanwhile, Marvel Comics has announced that in the upcoming months, several series they put on hiatus, either because of the pandemic or because of writing issues, are coming back to the calendar. Originally announced this past February, in February of 2020, Silk is getting her own self-titled series again this coming March.
Cool.
The series was long delayed, but it is back on the calendar. It's coming from writer Maureen Gu and artist Takeshi Miyazawa. Apparently, Cindy Moon is going to be working a day job as a reporter for the new media empire Threats and Menaces under her previous boss, J. Jonah Jameson, who, if you're not up to date on things, knows who Spider-Man is under the mask.
And is a blogger now?
He's been a podcaster, blogger, and a big supporter of. I don't want to say like an open supporter of Spider-Man, but he stopped talking about him and mass people as threats and menaces. It's
I
more like an
stopped crashing him.
armistice between the two of them. You know, I will stop jacking with you. Please stop webbing up my face.
And actually, going back to the image of the Spider-Man's new armor, you see Jameson chasing him down into the car
Yeah.
in the
So,
background.
I guess the. I t okay, so Cindy Moon getting her own series again is fine. The character always seems to have unexplored possibilities, in my opinion. I just would like to know what would happen if J. Jonah Jameson found out for the second time some costume person has been working for him. Especially another spider person. He might actually lose that mustache.
Yep.
He will definitely. He's definitely gonna throw some kind of fit. I'm not sure where it would lead to, but.
Seriously. But another Marvel character who may be underutilized, depending on what you think about them, is also getting a new miniseries in March.
Who's that?
Dane Whitman, the Black Knight.
Really?
Oh,
It's spinning out of the King in Black event. It's called King in Black, Black Knight, coming this March from Marvel Comics. He's making a couple tie-in appearances, and out of that will come Black Knight, Curse of the Ebony Blade. It will be a limited series by writer Cy Spurrier, who is also writing the King in Black one-shot for the Black Knight, and the artist will be Sergio Davila. And the Black Knight is one of those characters that always feels like he gets the short shrift. He's carrying a... What makes him special is not necessarily his lineage, although the Ebony Blade is a family problem for the Whitmans. But the Ebony Blade itself is a cursed item. It tends to bring bad luck to the person wielding it. However, it's also a blade that can cut through darn near anything in the Marvel Universe. So it's a powerful weapon, but it causes the holder just... not unnatural suffering, just a lot. So, I always feel sorry for the guy, because he's been an Avenger, he's been a Defender, he's been in a few different stories, and he always seems like he's on the cusp of some kind of big-time thing, and then either the writing isn't there, or he's put through the ringer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm curious to know what's going to happen. As a matter of fact, I think Dane Whitman is about to make an appearance in the Marvel Cinematic Universe soon. I don't remember where, but I swear I heard that this character is going to be in one of the shows or movies upcoming. And another thing back on the schedule for this April is Kurt Busiek's The Marvels. It's supposed to be a sprawling story across all of Marvel history coming out this April. The art will be by Yildiray Senar with covers from Alex Ross. The Marvels will be stories from across Marvel's 80-plus years of continuity, including the introduction of a few brand new characters coming out in this series. So The Marvels has a chance to tell old and new tales at the same time. You know, I have no problem with the idea. It's just these new characters are going to have to be something really special if you're going to tell stories interwoven in Marvel's history.
Definitely.
You know, you cannot half-ass this. As soon as you do, people will deride it and dump it. And you can never tell how these things are going to happen until they're out. But speaking of characters from Marvel history, another Marvel stalwart is getting a miniseries in March.
Okay.
Either you big fans of the Thor pantheon of characters?
Yes and no.
Barely familiar with it.
Well, the same man is writing and drawing this. Daniel Warren Johnson is doing a new Beta Ray Bill miniseries.
Really? Okay.
Yep, cool. He's teaming up with the colorist Mike Spencer just to do the colors on it. This will come off his recent Warren Johnson was recently working on a Wonder Woman Dead Earth miniseries. And creator-owned books under Extremity and Murder Falcon. Apparently, the new Beta Ray Bill title will tie into the current King in Black Venom-centric event that's currently dominating Marvel's main series, or miniseries anyway. And the first cover shows Bill in a new suit of armor, which, if you recall, Thor recently broke Stormbreaker in a fight between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And Bill is carrying an axe.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a godly weapon. I'm sure it's something he borrowed from Thor's personal arsenal, but yeah, he's carrying an axe. So it looks like Bill's going to get... Well, I mean, the image from the first cover is interesting in a couple respects. One, it shows Bill in his new outfit with a rather interesting-looking axe, like I said. But the other thing that makes it interesting is what Bill is facing down or what's stalking him in this image. On the cover is Bill being loomed over by Fin Fang Foom, the legendary dragon from Marvel Comics.
Oh, boy.
Currently covered in one of Null's symbiotes.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, that's not good in any respect. So, yeah, I'd say if this is a miniseries, Bill's first challenge is, you know, upper tier.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know how that's going to shake out. It's not... Beta Ray Bill's never been a big thing for me. However, I also can't discount the idea that Bill may have some kind of weird side appearance in the upcoming Thor Love and Thunder film.
Oh, cool. I was wondering if they would ever introduce him because of...
Like I said, I don't know for sure that he will be, but we have a new movie coming out where we for sure are getting a Jane Foster Thor.
His likeness was in Ragnarok.
Right.
So
He was one of the face statues on the palace.
okay. So there are questions to be answered there. However, another character that's going to be in, that will be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the new Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness, is getting their own miniseries.
Shang-Chi?
America Chavez.
Oh, cool.
Miss America is getting a new miniseries. It's called Made in the USA. It's been scheduled for March of this year.
Cool.
It was originally scheduled for March of last year, or originally announced, I'm sorry, March of last year for a July 2020 debut. So this has been pushed back a bit. The first issue is being done by writer Kalinda Vasquez and artist Carlos Gomez. It's a 5-issue limited series. You know what? This is kind of a curiosity for me because remember I told you that I got this really interesting She-Hulk commission? Shared it with you guys. Carlos Gomez is the artist.
Oh, neat.
Nice. Okay.
He's also a fan of mine on Instagram, which really just kind of boggles my mind. You know, but he has said if he ever makes it to California, he wants to meet up so I can get something in my giant book of memories.
Oh, cool.
I think I picked out what I'd like him to do, too. I
What's
can't.
that?
Well, I have one of two things picked out, and both of them are kind of semi-complicated. I would either like him to do Emma Frost, like looking at herself in a three-part mirror, and you know, like all three parts are her from her different eras, like one in her original White Queen outfit, one in her Uncanny outfit, one in like her current Krakoan outfit, you know?
I like the all black one, frankly.
It looks good, but I just, you know, if I only got one shot, I need to pick carefully. But
That's
yeah,
true.
in all honesty, every time I think of Emma Frost, I think of her in a white outfit.
Yeah.
Pick one.
The other idea would be I would like him to do the Betsy Braddock version of Captain Britain, but in the background put like profiles of both you know, her purple outfit face and then her you know, her Quanon face.
Oh, that would be a really hard choice. I'd still go with Emma Frost, personally. I'm a big X-Men fan.
Yeah, I'd have to ask him because depending, I don't know if he's talking about like a favor or if he's talking about I will do a commission for you if you ask. It's like, you know, I need details.
Yeah, I'm probably leaning toward Emma Frost because she has a lot more. There's a lot more to her character for
Yeah,
me, anyways.
and you've seen his art style. He is really good when it comes to like bodacious women. I mean, that's definitely something he excels at.
So, Emma Frost it is.
We've decided for you.
Thank you.
Yes, the council has spoken.
Okay. Well, Steve Orlando is working for Marvel Comics for the first time, and he's doing it in an interesting way. He's doing it on a special Avengers one-shot celebrating 50 years of the Man-Thing in Marvel Comics. It's going to be Avengers Curse of the
an odd
Man-Thing
thing
number
to celebrate.
Yeah, Avengers Curse of the Man-Thing number one. Orlando promises some intense body horror alongside superhero action, thanks to a brand new villain they're calling the Harrower. I like the name, even though it's a little bit odd.
Right.
But Man-Thing I've always kind of had mixed feelings about, because while I do feel like it's grown into its own thing, it's kind of hard to ignore that it was Marvel's attempt at recreating the Swamp Thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
You know, it's hard to let that go. It's like Thanos and Darkseid, they are now very separate entities, but Swamp Thing and Man Thing, even though they've had time, they're still very similar.
Same things, haha.
Ouch. However, the designs for the Harrower, I'm almost interested to know their story. I almost don't want, because of time constraints, I'm not going to spend time picking through the article to figure out what their story is. But the design has been added to this story. And if there is like an antithesis to the man thing, the Harrower may be it. It's a woman in some kind
Ooh.
of weird, like torn or thorny white bodysuit with, I want to say, like dirty or rugged feet. Occasionally, it looks like she has a swamp moss cape,
It
and
looks like a ghillie suit.
yeah, and she's got like looks like platinum blonde curly hair.
This looks
I'm
interesting.
kind of interested what all the striping's about.
Yeah, it says that her scars glow, so whatever's on her arms and all over her body, it glows.
Interesting.
See, now I am interested in this one shot because I feel like there's a story attached to this character. However, a character that Marvel doesn't technically own is getting a second shot at recent Marvel comics.
Who?
The Ultraman. The Japanese hero? You recently had
Oh, yeah.
He recently had a Marvel special. Apparently, he's done well enough that in March 2021, there will be another miniseries called The Trials of Ultraman. It's supposed to bring in new supporting characters and villains from Ultraman's long-running canon stories and building a narrative based around public distrust of the Ultraman character. According to the solicit, quote, Ultraman narrowly averted a catastrophe decades in the making. The world was saved, but also forever changed. Now come the consequences. Much of the populace regard their defenders with suspicion. Enemies hide in plain sight, and even those closest to Shin Hayata don't necessarily trust the Giant of Light. But at last, a long-thought lost comrade has mysteriously returned. The rise is over, the training wheels are off, and the stakes have never been higher. The trials of Ultraman begin here, unquote. I know a lot of friends who are really into the Sentai genre and things Ultraman related. It's just never been a serious thing for me. Tokugawa shows are just not my deal.
I mean, that's fair. It could be considered an acquired taste.
You know what? I blame my parents. My first memories of interacting with like Japanese entertainment culture was not Ultraman. It was giant robots. You know,
my first foray into something like that was something I saw before Power Rangers, and it was a Korean version of it, thanks to my mother.
Oh, yeah, I've actually seen snippets of that one.
I don't remember what it was. I don't even understand what anyone was saying. But it was her attempt to teach me Korean.
Okay, well, there's something coming out from Marvel Comics that is not Marvel Comics, and it's something that Joanna might actually kill for.
Uh-oh.
I know, that sounds really bizarre, right? So it's a Marvel product that's not a Marvel product and something Joanna would want, and I can guarantee it.
Okay, hit me.
Okay, it's retailing for $125.
Yikes.
It's 1,344 pages.
Ooh.
Marvel Comics somehow has got the license to recreate what they call Star Wars Legends, the Old Republic Omnibus.
Oh, I know what those are.
They are collecting what they call the entirety of Dark Horse Comics' Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic arc. And
I need it.
The story on the CBR details what series are in this omnibus. Again, 1,344 pages. It collects Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 1 through 50, Knights of the Old Republic War 1 through 5, The Old Republic Handbook, and material from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic Rebellion number 0.
I've been trying to collect those. So, wow.
Two covers.
Can you link those to me?
Well, I mean, I don't have it yet. It says this is going on sale July 7th, 2021, so technically no one has it as of yet. However, you know, if you know a comic book shop with a really generous person on the pull list, they'll probably pull it down for you. There's going to be two covers for this handbook, one featuring art by Dustin Weaver, originally from the Knights of the Old Republic handbook, and another by Brian Chang, which I guess was originally art from Knights of the Old Republic number 31.
Ooh.
So, you got your attention?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah.
My cats are looking at me weird.
Mark your calendar, July 7th of 2021, $125, this comes out.
7/7/21.
Yep. Meanwhile, Marvel's Voices anthology have actually done better business than I thought they would. The first one, if you recall, was Marvel using a one-shot to feature some of their characters by creators who are both minorities and women. Then they put out the second one-shot, which was all characters and creators who are indigenous peoples, all Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
They've announced that the third one, Voices Legacy, which is coming out this February, appears to be another case of minority creators, which I'm sure is no coincidence that February is typically Black History Month in the U.S. However, they're also adding some high-power talent to this one. They recently added Nacha Bustos and Olivier Coppiel as artists on this one shot.
Oh.
Olivier Coppiel is one of my favorite artists. He's the guy that did The Magic Order with Mark Millar.
Mm-hmm.
So this is in addition to writers Hochi Anderson, Danny Lore, Nnedi Okafor, Tochi Onyebuchi, and Stephanie Williams. Other artists already on this are Chris Cross, Sean Hill, Valentin DeLandro, and Ken Lashley. And if you recall, this is the one where they announced they're having a special Jubilee story as well.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to pick this one up. I made sure to pick up the original one because it has the first appearance of the new Children of the Atom.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Marvel is hitting me in the feels. So, let me back up and explain, because that sounds really odd. When I first started reading comics, I was reading Transformers, because my parents knew I was into all things Transformers when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
In 1986, the Transformers line was pretty much ending. The only thing left were comic books, and that lasted for about another year before they started to go under themselves. So, being that comic books were my only real form of entertainment at the time, when the Transformers comics started to really dip in quality to my child mind, I started to look for other things, and this is the time I started to read X-Men and X-Factor at the same time. And this is the period of X-Factor where they were into their second group of outfits. You know, Jean Grey is in red and yellow, Cyclops is in blue and white. So I have some very distinct memories of this period. Not only are these costumes getting ready to reappear, Cyclops and Jean Grey in their second X-Factor costumes in an upcoming issue of X-Men, but the original creators of X-Factor, Walt and Louis Simonson, are confirmed to return for an X-Men legend story in the X-Factor era. The two of them are getting together to do a story that's coming straight out of the 80s era, and Simonson said, quote, "I'm getting to draw it again. I'm drawing two issues of X-Factor and Wheezy is writing, so I'm getting to draw all that stuff again. It's set back in her continuity after my time on the book," unquote. And apparently some of the storylines will also involve Apocalypse, the X-Men villain which was born from this particular period of comics.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's right in the center of my nostalgia.
Nice.
Last up in Marvel comic news is another X-Men story, and this is probably very unique for a number of reasons. There's going to be a miniseries called Demon Days X-Men. It is a 5-part Japanese horror story that includes Marvel characters in Japanese horror environments.
Ooh.
And when I say it's unique, it has a number of unique properties. Number one, they're using Kwannon as the central character of at least the first issue in this. She is on the cover, and if you're saying she's been in several series before, no, Psylocke has in her body, not Kwannon. And apparently in the story, she's playing a masterless swordswoman who's being hunted by a black inky creature, so the Japanese demon version of the Venom symbiote is following her around.
Hmm.
And the other thing that makes it special is that a woman who previously has only been doing like special variant covers for Marvel is doing her first interior work for it. Peach Momoko, one of Marvel's Stormbreakers, their new hot artist, is doing the interiors for this. I'm actually fairly excited for this. This sounds interesting to me. I mean, I know that I say that Marvel is getting into like Japanese-style storytelling, and some people are going to go, "Oh my god, the manga-verse is back, please don't." No, this is more like Japanese folklore storytelling.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's way different from being a storyteller.
Yeah, I shared an image from the interiors, ooh, and it's pretty.
That's very pretty.
According to the solicit, quote, "The Demon Day saga will kick off when a wandering swordswoman with a psychic blade arrives at a village that's being targeted by demons. One demon is black and white with a terrifying red tongue, and another may be the strongest demon there is. Ready your katana and enter a mysterious world of demons, monsters, mutants, and magic in a stunning premiere issue that will present readers with a revolutionary reimagination of the Marvel Universe that could only come from Peach Momoko," unquote. Momoko herself was interviewed by Newsarama, and she said, quote, "Because I love yokai stories, horror stories, Japanese folktales, classic samurai tales, I wanted to tackle as much as possible telling these concepts with the Marvel characters and making something Marvel fans can still appreciate while bringing in a fresh direction. Also, I had to know how much I could push Marvel's boundaries in character designing and storytelling," unquote. She went on to say that the entire miniseries is going to take place in Japan. I'm fully on board on this, frankly. I love new tellings of things, and this is definitely new.
Neat.
Would you like to see the cover real quick? Because I think you will be blown away by that image.
Yes, yes, yes.
And again, she's only been doing covers and variants. Oddly enough, well, not oddly, she's been one of the hottest variant artists that Marvel's had lately. A lot of her stuff is instantly in the double digits.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. That but looks good.
That image of her on the cover is somehow elegant and savage.
I'm almost gonna kind of anime. I almost got kind of get a Samurai Jack feel out of this.
So, I like it.
Yeah, I can't speak for you guys, but this miniseries, I'm getting this.
Yes.
Next up, we have DC Comic News. This is where we talk about the other major company in comics and what characters and storylines they have coming now and in the near future. We just heard a whole bunch of announcements about new things coming from Marvel Comics in March. So obviously the news about March solicits industry-wide are out there. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest surprises from DC Comics when it came to March distribution is that they're reducing the number of series they put out. You're not surprised?
No.
I'm kind of waiting for the other part of the story.
Well, let's see. By the end of December, DC published 50 different one-shots, miniseries, or ongoing titles. With the February solicits, even with a future state event going on, that goes to 40. And then when you get to March, when DC's continuity picks back up post-future state, that number goes down again to 34. I don't know what the plan is. Because we've had a number of discussions. None of us in this room are really big DC fans. We all have different issues with either storytelling or characters. However, we never deny the instant recognizability of a lot of DC and its symbology. So that they're reducing these comics so drastically while Marvel is expanding is a really bad sign.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since they recently announced that they're adding a third Batman pillar book. In my personal opinion, the last thing the universe needs is more Batman. They have so many characters at their disposal. Why doesn't Black Canary have a series?
Right. I mean, I've been saying this for literally years.
I mean, Harley Quinn is returning post-future state. Her series was canceled in November, as was Suicide Squad. But it's a different Suicide Squad coming in March. But they're both recognizable names. However, other titles are not returning post-future state. There is no new Supergirl series, and there isn't an Aquaman series for the first time in quite a while. So I don't know what the plan is. I hope DC comes out with a decent narrative. Because, again, I may not be a fan, but competition creates a lot of interesting innovation in an industry.
You say you hope to come out with a narrative. I'm still trying to figure out what books are still in canon. And
believe it or not, we are going to get into that rather significantly. Because just before Future State started this week, DC Comics finished their Endless Winter event, where a Norse god of frost, I believe, was enveloping the world in ice, and the DC heroes and villains had to band together to defeat him, right?
Hmm.
Well, they didn't necessarily defeat him, they made him agree to go back into stasis. it turns out that the place where he went into stasis, something in DC Comics was restored. Superman has restored his Fortress of Solitude.
Wow, that was missing?
It's been destroyed for a while in the Arctic Circle. The new one is still in the Arctic Circle. It's above Greenland now, in the Jokleborg region. And now, not only is it using new Kryptonian technology, Clark also felt it was safer to rebuild the fortress off the site of the original one in case there was something left there or people have been scavenging. So, on top of everything else, you know, this is Superman's oasis, and now it's also the place where he guards the Frost King and his family, I guess, against outside threats.
I guess.
The last Fortress of Solitude was destroyed by a relatively new villain in DC Comics, Rogel Zar, who claimed he destroyed Krypton. He kind of went on a rampage and tore the whole damn thing down.
Right, and I think Zod's one eventually dealt with him.
Zod helped, because Zod may not be a hero in DC Comics, but he is above all a nationalist. He's a big Krypton first individual.
Yeah, and the guy that destroyed Krypton, well, it's probably at the top of his list.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a fan of classic DC tropes and items, I mean, that's good news for you. Now, also this week, Death Metal finally ended. And
wait for part 3.
Please don't.
You know they're going to.
I don't know, because they may not have room for it, considering what they've done. Because with Death Metal now over, And even though the regular DC continuity is technically on hiatus for the month of March, or for the month of January and February during Future State, Death Metal did lay out what the DC universe is going to look like post-Future State. And first of all, there is no more DC Multiverse. It is now the DC Omniverse.
Really?
Yeah, apparently, according to the information on GamesRadar, it's no longer a multiverse. It is a multiverse of multiverses. So now they call it an Omniverse.
Wow, they're just getting more and more ridiculous.
Earth Zero, what we know as the Prime Earth in DC Comics, is no longer the center of the multiverse, though. Apparently, the Alpha World is called Elseworld, which if you've been if you've been a long-term reader of DC, you know that term is the place where alternative stories happen in DC publishing.
Like the infamous Killing Joke.
And Kingdom Come.
Yep.
Really?
Yes, Kingdom Come is an Elseworld tale. It's not main continuity stuff.
I guess your White Knight series is also part of that, too.
I suppose, and they better keep that firewalled, in my opinion. there's also a new super team that's been formed in a new floating headquarters on the dark side of the moon. It looks like it's fused together technology from the Hall of Justice and the Hall of Doom, and representing that odd fusion is also the team inside. It is unnamed, it has no series as of yet, but the assembled members are Hawkgirl, Mr. Terrific, the Martian Manhunter, Talia al Ghul, Vandal Savage, and Lex Luthor.
Oh, that's an interesting group of people.
Yeah, I'm almost curious to read this ending just to find out any sort of hints as to why these six people are together. And I don't mean to sound reductive, but Hawkgirl, Mr. Terrific, and Martian Manhunter are three heroes. The three villains here are Talia al Ghul, Vandal Savage, and Lex Luthor. When you stack the three side by side, the heroes seem horribly outmatched by the three villains in the room. And granted, Lex Luthor is human, but he's insanely smart in the DC universe.
And they are in conflict with each other or working with each other?
They're all working out of the same house. I don't know what the purpose of this is. The new headquarters is kind of a combination of the bizarre symbols that we saw in the early Justice League run of the like the cosmic doorknobs and everything. They call it the Totality. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. This all came out today. So, now that the multiverse has been restored, obviously the map of the multiverse now has meaning again in DC Comics, which is something we saw spinning out of the multiversity. It's one of those things that came out from the post-52 era. According to Scott Snyder, not only are a multitude of characters who died in Death Metal back alive again, but the results of the cosmic-level fight that occurred, several characters who may have died before Death Metal are alive again. I know. Trust me. I understand where you're coming from. I'm going to try and reserve judgment until I read it, but frankly, we've discussed how Death Metal started with Earth pretty much being rewritten and the odds of a Wish Away ending were so high going in. And, Jesse, you said before about DC continuity and how it can be confusing? It might be even more confusing. Because apparently, after Death Metal, all of continuity matters.
You know, you can't hear it, but my eyes are rolling. And
I thought that was the phone. Okay. So, apparently Barry Allen said to Wally West that as a result of Wonder Woman's battle with the Darkest Knight, quote, "The timeline was unknotted once and for all, and all of our memories returned," unquote. Which makes it sound like the four different continuities of DC are now in the heads of the various characters that inhabit it. Hawkgirl also explains to Wally that hypertime is healing, and characters will experience flashes of events that happened in hypertime and alternate paths in pretty epic fashion. That's a quote. I don't know how to feel about that, only because DC continuity is so twisted, convoluted, and rewritten, I don't know how you make sense of it.
Yeah, if it all matters and they all remember, how does that everyone have a damn migraine.
I don't know. I don't know. However, we've had images come out that are teasing a new period in DC Comics post-death metal, post-future state, called the Infinite Frontier. Now, we've seen one of these images before when it came to the announcement of Wonder Woman's new series, right? It was Wonder Woman surrounded by a bunch of friends and foes somewhere on Themyscira, if you recall. Now, other images have been released in the same vein. I sent you guys a link so you can go through the images with me from Newsarama. And again, the first one is Wonder Woman 770 that's called Infinite Legends. And of course, in it, you can see characters like the Cheetah and Steve Trevor, Max Lord, Dr. Psycho, Silver Swan, Yara Flor, Nubia, and Wonder Girls, right? Now, you scroll down a little bit to Superman 29, Infinite Hope, and things get a little more convoluted. Because I can see, obviously, characters like Lois Lane, Jimmy Olsen, Supergirl, and the two Superboys. Apparently, Ma and Pa Kent are alive again. The Red Cloud, who's been harassing Superman in Metropolis recently as a gang leader. Mongol, Brainiac, and I believe that's the Toy Man in the balloons up there.
The only thing that makes sense.
The saddest part is, of the images, probably the most compelling one is the one regarding the Bat Family, because there's a lot in there. And a lot of updates, as you recall. I mean, it's Harley Quinn in a new costume. It looks like she's fully going on this idea that she's trying to make amends for what happened during her period as the Joker's Moll. You can also see Catwoman and Nightwing. It looks like Spoiler and Orphan are indeed keeping their new Batgirl-inspired outfits. I don't know why Batwoman is so high up in the back there.
No priority.
Maybe. There's
I hate I said that.
Barbara in dressed as Oracle with her laptop. The Red Hood appears to be back in town. I don't know who the man in the black jacket is. Punchline, the Joker. I guess that's the magistrate in the blue. It looks like Grifter is going to be staying in town for quite a while. The Huntress. And something I found out from reading a few articles is that one of the major things that Batman's going to have to deal with is a villain he knows pretty well, but apparently a villain who's ready to step up into being an A-lister.
Really?
Scarecrow is going to figure big into upcoming Gotham stories.
I guess that's why he's up there on top.
I suppose. I mean, if you scroll down a little further, though, it gets even weirder because you see the Justice League 59 cover Infinite Adventures, which deals with a lot of characters, right? I imagine behind Amanda Waller in the top center, that's supposed to be the new Suicide Squad, which does involve Match.
Wow, really?
It appears so. It also has a Talon in it.
Yeah.
It looks like the Titans are going up against Lobo.
Really?
Yeah, and the Titans involve old and new members, like Roundhouse, Nightwing, Donna Troy, and Crush. It looks like something serious is going to happen to Jon Stewart, who, I don't know if you've noticed, but it looks like he's become the preeminent Green Lantern in DC Comics lately.
That's fine.
Yeah, but what really is curious to me is the other half of this image, because you see those assembled heroes, right?
Yeah.
You are staring at the Justice League. Hawkgirl, Aquaman, The Green Arrow, Black Canary, Naomi, Black Adam, Superman, Batman, and Hippolyta.
Oh.
So there is obviously going to be some big major shift when it comes to DC's biggest superhero team.
I'll be honest, between Naomi, Black Adam, and Superman, that is a major powerhouse right there.
To me, you can X out Superman and just make it all about the new members, Naomi, Black Adam, and Hippolyta.
Yeah,
You know,
no,
the
I'm not
one,
denying that one.
I mean, that's one of the few master warriors older than Diana.
Yeah.
Who's that one, the guy in the back, then?
Which guy in the back? Oh, the
Behind the
villain way up
actors.
there? I'm not sure, honestly. I don't know what that is. It almost looks like it could be a silhouette of the same character that was debuted at in Naomi's series, but I doubt it.
Yeah, I'm looking in the background for everything you got. There's Red X right there behind the Teen Titans, and there's Swamp Thing right there below Crush behind, I guess, Billy and John Stewart.
As a matter of fact, Nightwing himself is going to have a new status quo. They're trying to solidify him as an A-list hero in the new era. The writer of the recent Suicide Squad series, Tom Taylor, is the lead writer in the series. And he's detailed a couple of things. Apparently, Barbara Gordon's going to feature fairly heavily in the series. I don't know as Oracle or as a as his on-again, off-again girlfriend. But also, Nightwing's going to have a sidekick he's never had before. A three-legged dog.
Really?
A three-legged dog.
Yeah, I don't think... When the story was written, I think it was written tongue-in-cheek. I don't think the dog is supposed to be an active combatant. Apparently, in the first issue of Tom Taylor's run, I think it's number 78 coming out in March, one of the first things Nightwing does is he comes across an alley where a couple street punks are brutalizing a dog in an alley, and he decides to step in.
Oh, good for him.
So after that, it looks like he's going to adopt the dog.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Call him Lucky.
Newsarama even talked to him about the dog, and they said, what's the breed of the puppy? Everyone weighed in on this one. In the end, we decided to just make her a mutt. But an orphan adopting a rescue pup was too perfect. We hope she'll stick around, unquote. I don't like the end of that.
Hopefully it doesn't happen to
yeah, I was about...
him, what happens to Bruce Wayne's orphans.
Are you kidding? When they said, I hope she sticks around, my first thought is keep her away from the fridge.
My thoughts exactly.
Wow, that went dark.
But there's more news about the post-Future State era, the Infinite Frontier of DC. Apparently, starting with The Flash, issue number 768, they're starting a new story they're calling The Redemption of Wally West. The solicit reads, quote, beginning with Flash number 768, after the events spanning from DC Universe Rebirth to Heroes to Crisis, In Crisis to Dark Knight, Death Metal, the former Kid Flash calls it quits. Family is more important to Wally than a connection to the Speed Force. If you love The Flash and want to hit the ground running for the redemption arc of DC's favorite speedster, The Flash number 768 is the perfect jumping on point, unquote. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I wouldn't say I have a favorite Flash. All I would say is at this point, considering how bad he screwed up since he returned, you need to retire Barry Allen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's almost the direct reason a number of things are messed up right now. Actually, it just occurred to me, the new Justice League doesn't have a speedster.
Really? Oh.
Again, the roster, according to the image, is Hawkgirl, Black Canary, Green Arrow, Hippolyta, Black Adam, Naomi, Batman, Aquaman, Superman.
Well, Naomi, Black Adam, Superman can move just as fast as the Flash, so...
Yeah, but they also don't have some of the more esoteric abilities he has, including the ability to vibrate through walls.
Surprising, Superman could do something similar to that.
You know,
watched Death Battle.
You know, if Black Canary is going to be on the team, I would like it if somebody would play with her abilities. Maybe she can find a way to modulate her voice so that she could perhaps liquefy solid metal. Not metal, but solid objects.
Or at least make it very malleable to be moved.
Yeah, I mean, even Siren in Marvel Comics, she found an ability to modulate her voice so that she could manipulate people. You know, hit the pleasure centers of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Hit that brown note.
Okay, you shut up.
I hate myself already.
I bet you do. Meanwhile, there is another brand new series spinning out of the Infinite Frontier. The Evil Justice League is getting a series.
Syndicate?
Yeah, the Crime Syndicate's getting its own series, complete from their home base of Earth 3. I'm a little astonished they're doing this. But I'm sorry?
Honestly, back when you mentioned Ultraman and during the Marvel section, I thought... the Ultraman from the Syndicate.
No, they are doing... See, that's the thing. Because I haven't read it, I don't know if this is a version of the Crime Syndicate people are familiar with, although I imagine not, because a lot of these characters sound like new versions. It's almost like the their new Omniverse to spit out a new version of the Crime Syndicate.
Yeah.
It appears to be new versions of Ultraman, Superwoman, Power Ring, Owlman, Atomica... And I can't remember what they called their version of the Flash. I think they call him Johnny Quick in this universe.
Yeah, Johnny Quick.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's really kind of cheesing people off, frankly, is the new Power Ring. Now, I mean, when you take a look at the image, there doesn't appear to be anything really odd about it. And I'm sending you guys a copy of the cover. You can see right there, it's obviously your evil Justice League. Atomica appears to be a Hispanic woman, but nobody's really talking about that. And there's no word as to whether or not these characters are the classic, you know, multiversal evil allegories of other characters, although they probably have to be. But, yeah, you can see Power Ring up there. Why do you think people would be mad at that?
I got. It's because he's black?
Actually,
That's
yes,
the only thing that. Really?
It is,
wow.
But wait,
Eddie.
Wait, wait, wait. Because you have to understand this. Now, obviously, Power Ring is somebody in black and green, you know, like a lot of Green Lanterns are. And it's a black bald man with a green mask. This man's name is Hal Jordan.
Say what now?
I'm dead serious. I read the synopsis. The new power ring of the syndicate is a black man named Hal Jordan.
Is this some sort of cruel joke?
I have no idea.
Recycle the name?
I do not know why they're doing this. I mean, if you want to change the character, fine. You know, if you want to make it a you know, black power ring, fine. If you want to make it Jon Stewart, fine. I don't know why it has to be a black guy named Hal Jordan. Doesn't that feel like kind of splitting hairs in a certain way?
To be honest, I would honestly prefer to call Jon Stewart and just have that interesting battle of wills between the two of them.
I don't know why they made this particular decision.
I mean, Jon Stewart would be a more logical explanation. Just
in all honesty, I just would have had be a different name entirely, to be honest.
There may be a story aspect to this, I don't know. Maybe Hal Jordan has inhabited the body of Jon Stewart in this universe. That would actually make sense to me in a certain respect.
You know what? He does get... His habit does kind of look similar when he was...
Parallax.
Parallax, yeah.
Because
of body possession.
I don't know, and we're not going to get any answers till March. I'm not sure I'm going to pick up this series because I've never been really big into villain books personally. But I'm hoping there's a story. I'm just trying not to prejudge. I'm hoping there's a story or reason that's going to make this make some sort of sense.
It's DC. Don't hold your breath.
Look, you know me. I try to be optimistic about things. Just because you're cynical and right doesn't mean I have to be cynical myself.
I'm just realistic.
Hey, noticed I said you were right.
I noticed that. I did take note of that. I'm just losing faith in them as a company as a whole.
Okay. Well, DC Comics has said that the next Batman, the Tim Fox Batman, will play a role in the new DC Universe.
Okay.
According to James Tynion, quote, I think it's fair to say that Tim Fox and everything with the Fox family in general that we started setting up in the pages of Batman 101 will have a direct impact on the Gotham line next year. From March and beyond, the shape it takes. I can't really get into it, but just stay tuned, unquote. And, you know, the unfortunate thing was, I was thinking about a lot of this last night, with Tim Fox, not Luke Fox, not Duke Thomas, being revealed as the next Batman. The fact that he's been revealed as it, you know, that's fine. I don't have really a particular dog in this fight. What does bother me a little bit is that we seem to get a little bit excited about the idea of a Batman of color and how that story can change, right? Except it almost feels like they've set up Tim Fox to simply be a black Bruce Wayne. I mean, if you think about it, not only is he turning into Batman, but his family also recently inherited Bruce Wayne's billions.
Yeah. But still, money isn't exactly... I mean, everyone jokes that that's his superpower, but... He had a different life and different life experiences than a black man would have, money or not.
I can agree with that. It feels like something that if you're going to make Tim Fox into a billionaire to be Batman, I would just hope it would be more incremental than, hey, we've just given you everything Bruce Wayne had. See what you can do.
Yeah, that feels like it is a leading question.
It's a little bit forced. There's actually a more dynamic version of an African-American version of DC characters, and they're actually getting their own series in 2021. As part of the Infinite Frontier, Calvin Elvis of Earth 23 is getting his own series of some sort.
Who's that?
You don't know Calvin Elvis?
No.
Okay, he was first created by Grant Morrison and Doug Mankey back in Final Crisis number 7. Calvin Elvis, or Calvin Ellis... is a Kryptonian from Earth 23. He's an African-American or black Kryptonian. In difference to everything else that you usually know about DC, Calvin Elvis is president of the United States where he comes from.
Interesting. As an alien, though? He's Kryptonian.
I don't think his public identity is known. I think he's president of the United States, and, you know, other times he is their Superman. I don't think they realize that they're one and the same. The character is loosely based on Barack Obama from his term as president. Final Crisis was out during the period where Obama was in office. And it always felt like the character could tell a great story if you could decouple it from the rest of DC.
Let me guess, is this a jab at the whole he wasn't born in America thing?
No, I don't think so. I think it was okay. I think it was Grant Morrison really saying that at that point he thought of Barack Obama as a hero.
Okay.
I don't know if that's politically or ideologically, but at the same time, it's like, okay, if you're going to tell this story entirely in Earth 23, maybe that would be interesting, because again, I don't think that's the type of story you should tell within the rest of DC's multiverse, because every time this character appears, he's going to get compared to the first Superman.
I mean, it's DC. They're going to compare him to Superman whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
And the fans will.
Yep. Last up in DC Comics, a little bit of bad news. One of DC's young adult graphic novels has been put on hiatus without a new date.
Aww.
And it's one we were actually curious about reading because it's one of DC's, I guess you could say, second-tier characters getting their spotlight. Zatanna, Jewel of the Gravesand, has been pulled.
Dang it.
This is the one where Zatanna is a street magician hanging out in a, what do you say, a pureborn amusement park called the Gravesend. And it just, between the images and the idea of retelling Zatanna's story with a little more modern flair, I was actually interested in at least checking it out. But with this sorry?
No, I was just, yep, so was I.
They say it's going to be solicited at a later date, but they neglected to give us a date, which doesn't give me hope considering how drastically DC's been drawing back its line lately. So, I'm disappointed. Well, last up is our general comic and convention news. This is where we talk about comic books that are not Marvel or DC related, as well as conventions happening all over the internet lately. It was announced over the past couple weeks that there are new plans for 2021 Free Comic Book Day. First of those plans is they've moved it. Free Comic Book Day usually happens the first Saturday in May every year. Because of the pandemic, though, they've delayed Free Comic Book Day 2021 to August 14th.
Aww.
They're hoping that we have a chance to return to some sort of normalcy by then.
Bold of them to assume that's going to happen.
Seriously. They did not detail any sort of one-shots or any plans. They just announced the date so far. They want people to be ready and gear up for it. Meanwhile, Jim Lee's been rather active during the period of the pandemic. He has been, during Christmas and New Year's, he actually went to first responders he personally knew and handed them original artwork.
Oh, cool.
And I don't mean pages. I mean he drew something and then went out and handed it to people he knew. Hmm. Which is, considering his commissions right now are in the four-figure range, is incredibly kind. He also recently did a three-day auction. He did a pen and ink and whiteout 9x12 Illo board drawing of Jon Stewart with his Green Lantern ring.
Oh, neat.
He auctioned it to benefit comic book shops via Bink Foundation, B-I-N-C. So the man has been very prolific during this period doing what he can to help.
That's awesome.
Since the pandemic started, Jim Lee has raised over $600,000 to benefit comic book shops. Man, that guy, I would kill for even for a mark by the man. And Richard Meyer has dropped his lawsuit.
Really?
Yeah, do you guys recall that story?
I'm trying to recall it.
Okay, Richard Meyer is the writer of a comic book called Jawbreakers, and the publisher of Humanoids was going to publish the series. It was kickstarted to a decent degree, and Humanoids showed an interest. Well, Mark Waid also worked for Humanoids, and Meyer's series was suddenly dropped by Humanoid Comics. Meyer assumed it had to do with something Mark Waid personally said, as well as the fact that Meyer himself is rather big into Comicsgate. He's one of those. He's one of those people that believes that comic book creators who are women and or people of color and or LGBTQ people somehow diminish the quality of comic books. So Meyer decided to sue both Humanoid and Mark Waid personally for lost revenue. Well, as of this past period, Meyer dropped his lawsuits against Mark Waid and Humanoid Comics. There was no information. There doesn't appear to be any sort of settlement or anything. Waid also announced that Meyer dropped the lawsuit.
Interesting.
So I don't know if any. I don't know if money changed hands. I don't know if there's an agreement, or I don't know if Meyer lost somehow or could see the writing on the wall. But either way, it's done.
Interesting, though.
You know, personally, I mean, and I'm speaking just as a person, not as any other entity, I would not want to do business with Richard Meyer.
Nope.
You know, I'm a big believer that the more voices you get involved in something, the better your stories are going to be because you get different viewpoints. You know,
yep.
I'm excited to read stories by people who aren't me.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Mark Millar has announced he's working with some top Marvel and DC artists in 2021 on his Miller World series.
Okay.
He put out a tweet that involved a whiteboard with a number of names written down on it, and frankly, the names are rather impressive. Frank Quietly, Stuart Immonen, Carl Kerschel, Travis Cherist, Olivier Capiel, Matteo Scalera, Gigi Cavivago, Tommy Lee Edwards, Matteo Bufagni, and a secret DC/Marvel superstar, and more. Apparently, the first new series is going to launch 4 weeks after the Jupiter Legacy Season 1 on Netflix. And Jupiter Legacy itself is one of Miller World series and Netflix option to make a series out of.
Oh, okay.
I believe they've also done the same thing with The Magic Order. I'd be into that. Rob Liefeld has also been tapped to reboot Archie Comics' S.H.I.E.L.D. and Mighty Crusaders in 2021.
What?
Rob Liefeld, the creator or co-creator of Deadpool and the guy who created Cable in Marvel Comics?
Yeah, I know who he is. What's the S.H.I.E.L.D. and what?
The Mighty Crusaders. Archie Comics, in addition to Archie, also had a number of superhero properties. They basically dip their toes into superhero comics, and I wouldn't say it's ever gone great, but they're names that, if you've been around long enough, you're aware of. And apparently Rob Liefeld's been tapped to relaunch The S.H.I.E.L.D. and The Mighty Crusaders. This includes characters like The Comet, The Jaguar, Fly Girl, and more. As you can tell, these are pulp-era comic heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm always interested in new tales and new spins on things, Rob Liefeld is far from one of my favorite creators. And unfortunately, as soon as you take a look at this image of some of the redesigns, you can say it's very Liefeld.
Hmm.
All right, why is Namor in here?
You're being kind. I thought that was Karate Kid.
It's the hair. That's all I saw. I was like, oh, that's Namor. And
well, I fear a few things.
And some knockoff Cyclops.
I fear a few things here. I mean, the fly looks like a different version of the Beetle. And yeah. I'm not sure who the Shroud is. I imagine that's supposed to be a pulpy hero, but I'm getting definitive Deadpool vibes. See, that's one of the problems with Liefeld, is that when he hits on a concept, he reuses that concept ad nauseum.
Yep.
And unfortunately, a lot of the things he's using here feel like things that he's used before when he redesigned the New Mutants into X-Force and did again on his original series, Youngblood.
And he still has no grasp of the anatomy.
Oh, no, this is way better than it used to be. Way better.
It is way better, but I'm looking at the S.H.I.E.L.D.'s thighs and it's like, something's wrong here.
Well, it's not that bad. I mean, maybe his knees could be a little bit bigger, but it's nowhere near as bad as the balloon animal of his Captain America during the Heroes Reborn era. If you can find a better descriptor for it, fine. But every time I see that, that's what I think about. Dude, if you put a needle to his chest, he's going to deflate. I guarantee it. meanwhile, there's an original graphic novel called Operation Dragon, which involves dinosaurs in World War II.
What?
That got your attention, didn't it?
You know what? They've had werewolves, vampires, and Frankenstein monsters in there, sure, why not?
According to the solicit, quote, set in the Pacific during World War II, three American soldiers, a disgraced ex-cop, a mobster trying to escape his past, and an intelligence officer with a mysterious motive, come together for a mission of a lifetime. Their lives are turned upside down when they uncover Japan's top-secret superweapon, a deadly force of trained dinosaurs. feast on a mashup of wisecracking noir and butt-kicking action in this sci-fi pulp adventure as soldiers take on these Jurassic giants. It's coming out from Dark Horse Comics. I don't even know what to say about this, because the concept is somewhere between pulpy and heavy metal, and there's something about this is just funny enough that I want to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm good enough with the original Jurassic Park. I think I'm done with dinosaurs.
Hang on.
Actually, the original.
Well, this graphic novel is going on sale July 25th. Depending on my cash flow at the time, I may pick it up just because. I mean, it's something outside the norm, for sure.
That's fair.
Meanwhile, Team Juniper from the Ruby series, they're getting a manga anthology that's being released in July of 2021. It's the fifth volume of the Ruby manga anthology, but it's specifically about Team Juniper. They're the spotlight in this one.
Huh.
It's listed on Barnes & Noble on Amazon. Yeah, I don't have much information beyond that. It's definitely a manga-style adaptation of the characters from the popular Rooster Teeth series.
Okay.
Also, an award-winning artist, Dave Johnson, he wants to do more writing after the recent success of his series, Pop Kill. Newsarama talked to him and said, Dave, you're halfway through the release of Pop Kill and you've seen every issue be a huge success on Kickstarter. How does it feel co-writing a successful comic book series and doing it through crowdfunding? And he said, it feels great, especially for a non-superhero book. When I came up with the idea, I knew it would have a limited audience, but I hoped the fun aspect of the story would come through, and so far, so good. You know, hey, if it's working for you, it's working for you. I knew when I heard the series I would like to read it, but unfortunately I don't have money to pump into various Kickstarters all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I may try and see if maybe some of the back issues are out there so I can at least try to read it. Oh, by the way, Joanna, there's two items in this in this week's stories you're going to kill me for.
Okay.
Boom Studios has announced that they have a new Firefly series coming out.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's called Firefly, A Brand New Verse.
Oh.
It is set 20 years after the events of the original Firefly TV series. And the series will follow Zoe Aline Washburn and Hoban Washburn's daughter.
Yes, I knew it.
Who is the new captain of the Serenity with a new crew.
Yes.
It's being written by Josh Lee Gordon with art by Fabiana Mascolo. It's coming out March 10th of 2021. So relatively soon, I'd say.
Nice.
Would you like to hear the synopsis?
Absolutely.
Quote, set 20 years after the events of Firefly, Serenity soars the verse once again with a new captain, Emma, the daughter of Wash and Zoe. The old crew of the Serenity has gone their own way, and now Emma is working to prove herself to Zoe, alongside a new crew of castaways and misfits just trying to stay afloat. But when Serenity takes a job from a familiar face, they discover that their new living, breathing cargo is far more than they bargained for, and might bring them into conflict with the Alliance once again. Josh Lee Gordon and Fabiana Mascolo begin a new era for Joss Whedon's Firefly with first appearances of an all-new cast, adventures, and shocking new surprises. Unquote.
Can we get a show from that, please? That will go more than a season?
Well, you'd have to talk to a different group of executives, because remember, the argument used to be, Fox doesn't understand these things. Now you have to look at it and say, does Disney have time for these things?
It could be a cash cow. They wouldn't say no to that, like they did with Star Wars.
You know what? I would say it shouldn't be a new TV show. I would say if you're going to do this, it needs to be on a special branch of Disney Plus.
Yep, exactly.
Ooh, that would be cool.
As you can see, Zoe is in the background of this image, but it appears to be her daughter with at least two new crewmates.
That's going to be awesome. I'm very excited about this, because I always had this in my mind that Zoe was pregnant at the time that Wash was killed, and There Will Be More Adventures called it.
I'm a little disappointed that nobody ever picked up on what some of the original actors were talking about. The actors who played Jane and Callie, they often joked how fun it would be if they could get their pitch through to Fox for a new series about Jane and Callie taking care of the eventual kids of the Firefly crew.
Hold on, Callie?
Who's Callie?
I probably have the name wrong. The engineer?
Katie.
Katie.
Kaylee.
Kaylee. Okay.
There we go. Yeah.
Been a long time since I've watched the show.
Like, Cali. That's.
It's been a long time since I watched a show. But they always thought it'd be fun with the odd brother and sister relationship between Jane and Kaylee if the two of them were taking
Jane
care of
Jane would
kids.
Be the weird uncle that you sometimes yes. need to usher the kids out of the room for.
Well, he was talking about a brother and sister relationship between Jane and Kaylee and then the two of them having to work together to watch kids.
Yeah, Kaylee would be like the big sister or like the cool auntie who is also a little naive on raising kids. And then he would try to like take them shooting at the age of four.
I will.
She'd be the more practical and reasonable person, and while Jane would be the shoot
hey,
first and never ask questions.
Gunslinging is practical and reasonable, especially out in the Spans.
You know, this
it is, but Jane is a shoot first and never ask questions.
He you know, doesn't have the brain cells to ask questions.
Okay, I don't have the hour for this.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
You do.
The thing is, I would put this on my poll list as a speculative buy, because if this series at all becomes live action, the first appearance of these characters in comics could become very important.
True story.
So, I may have to put that on my list. Okay, it's fine. So there's three things you're going to kill me for this week.
Woohoo!
Boom Studios has launched a new Kickstarter campaign to release limited edition hardcovers of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers comic series.
I'm kind of over that.
Oh, are you? Okay. It's a 55-issue It's a 55-issue run that they're collecting in a 6-book limited premium edition hardcover volumes, each corresponding to one of the Power Rangers. In other words, with color and images of them on the cover.
I mean, it does sound cool, but not my thing these days.
It's pretty nifty. It even comes with plastic slipcover so that when they're outside of the covers, it's the characters getting ready to morph. Inside the slipcovers, it's the characters in their Ranger outfits, and then inside the plastic cover, it has their morpher emblazoned with some kind of energy effect.
That's cool.
It's pretty good
like
effect.
The idea.
Yeah. It's not my deal personally, only because I think they're fun to read, although I'm more of a graphic novel person. If I'm going for a hardcover, I have to be really into the series.
Mm-hmm. Well, why do you think I have all the Rat Queens in hardcover?
Meanwhile, the second issue of probably one of the best-selling indie books recently is coming out. TMNT, The Last Run in number 2, is scheduled for release in February. And in March, instead of the following issue, they're re-releasing issue number 1 in a director's cut.
Mm-hmm.
Which usually means you're getting the director's cuts in comic books these days are usually the finished version in addition to a black-and-white sketch version of the story, as well as the original story script printed in the back. I have no problems with director's cuts as a concept if you're interested in the making of a comic book. They always just kind of frustrate me because I feel like I'm paying for 3 times the story I need.
That's fair.
And last up in general comic news, Steve Orlando is deconstructing a classic comic book story in Project Patron.
Hmm.
He's working with artist Patrick Piazzalunga. I believe that's Italian. Steve Orlando's created a new contender for the world's greatest superhero. But the problem is that superhero's been dead for years.
Mm-hmm.
The limited series Project Patron is from Aftershock Comics, and it's a twist on the idea of the death of a superhero genre. Quote, Project Patron asks a simple question. What if the death of the world's greatest superhero was a con job? 30 years ago, the world watched as its greatest defender, the Patron, fought for it all against Woe, a primordial creature that last popped up to kill the dinosaurs. It was the greatest superhuman fistfight the world had ever seen, and at the end, but Woe and the Patron fell dead. But soon after, the Patron rose again. Or did he? Project Patron is the answer. When the world loses its greatest hero, those in power fear what we'll do without him, so they bring him back to life the best they can and replace him with a Reploid. This is the story of the team that pilots that Reploid, the people secretly behind the Patron's continued heroism, and the incredible sacrifices they make. Piloting the Patron Reploid might be the greatest thrill in history, but it comes at a price. Total anonymity, and a gig where every flight knocks a year off your life. The pressures on the team are enormous, so when a tragedy strikes at the heart of Project Patron, the world hangs in the balance as the greatest secret in modern history trembles on the brink of revelation. Unquote.
Hmm. And which label is this from?
Aftershock Comics.
Oh, okay.
This is kind of an interesting idea. It kind of mixes genres between superheroes and anime, really.
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand it, though. If the Patron is the world's greatest superhero and it has pilots, does that mean the world's greatest superhero is 20 feet tall, or is this some kind of remote control type thing? I'm a little bit confused. If I have the money, I will check this out. This is different, at the very least. Well, the subject of this week is catching up. Because of the period we were gone, I forgot to get the people the reading they need for any sort of subject this week, as well as a lot of things seem to have happened in the last 3 weeks, so this seemed to be a good chance to catch up on the last year's worth of stories and a few recent revelations. And I guess I wanted to start by asking you guys, in the last year, is there a story you've read that just kind of stuck out for you?
I really liked Far Sector.
Okay, I enjoyed that a lot. I just didn't think it would be that big of a story for you.
I think it's because I was telling other people about it that the details stuck in my mind. Mm-hmm. I know of some people that were looking for comics relating to or based on people of color. Mm-hmm. So I kind of dug through our library and pulled out some of the ones that I thought that they'd be interested in. And pretty much across the board, that was one that I was suggesting just because there was mystery, there was action, there was humor. I liked her attitude. I liked the novelty of her character.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it was more recent, I guess.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, it did debut, like, just last year.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Jesse?
You know, I really can't recall a story that kind of stood out to me, but I've been noticing on my... Yeah, no, I just can't recall anything that's sticking in my mind right now.
Okay. I mean, it's no secret I'm an X-Men mark. I just didn't think X of Swords was going to be the big adventure that it actually turned into.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Even as an X-Men reader, the events can sometimes fall flat simply because there's a lot of characters you have to keep track of, and it often comes down to one of them having kind of a lucky moment. In the case of X of Swords, there was a lot that went both right and wrong for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And that would be secondary to a memorable one for me.
On top of that, it didn't necessarily begin last year, but Daredevil is a surprisingly consistent run in its latest series, the Chip Zdarsky one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that has been 25 issues of just ups and downs and some, I guess, some non-preachy navel-gazing. Like, The Watchmen, to me, was a very preachy miniseries, but when Daredevil gets self-effacing, you get the feeling he's actually digging for emotional truth rather than just trying to be edgy or pithy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he suddenly turned into a relatable character. I've never had that feeling about Daredevil in my lifetime. So, that one really stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as far as disappointments go, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind to me was Joker War. And
yeah.
It's not because it was badly told, it's a fine story, but when you solicit that it's going to be a definitive pin, if not the end, of the relationship between Batman and the Joker, and then by the end of that story you find out that the Joker is still alive and is just kind of in hiding because he got what he wanted and now he's just going to watch things go. That doesn't feel like an end of any sort.
Nope.
You know, not emotionally, not physically, I mean, he's just waiting for the time to come back. As a matter of fact, I'm a little irritated because one of the big announcements about Infinite Frontier is that the Joker's getting a series.
Ugh.
So there really isn't a pause on his story other than a couple months.
Mm.
That's irritating to me.
Yeah, highly.
But you know what? There was one more big surprise to me in the last year of comic books. The Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
The Revolutionaries are a lot of fun. And as great as characters they are, I'm a little worried because I don't know how those characters will play without Tom Taylor writing them. I don't know if he still is.
Mm-hmm.
On top of which, I'm concerned because those are characters that don't seem to speak very much to DC's core fan base. They're relatively new. A lot of them are people of color or women, or even one of them is transgender. So DC never really seems to lock into these particular characters in a significant degree because they don't sell.
Mm-hmm.
At least not to DC's readers. So I'm rather concerned about that.
Hmm.
As a matter of fact, speaking of Infinite Frontier, there was a big fallout from Dark Knight's Death Metal going into Infinite Frontier that I feel like is rather serious.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman is not available in the DC Universe currently.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of her fight with the Darkest Knight, the multiversal, or formerly known as the Batman Who Laughs, the evil Bruce Wayne with Joker character traits,
mm-hmm.
who became the Darkest Knight when he absorbed the multiversal powers of a version of himself that had Dr. Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman has ascended to the next plane of existence.
Huh.
She is now in what they call the God Sphere, a part of the multiverse inhabited by celestial beings. So, the next phase of DC Comics, at least in the short term, will not have Diana as a direct influence on their series. And to go with it, she has this new all-white outfit, which actually does look like a godly Wonder Woman. I'm sending you guys the image right now that shows her in front of an image of, I believe that's the Spectre.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. That's pretty neat.
I like that one.
It's neat, and it's one of those things that's a mixed bag. I still need to read Dark Knight's Death Metal number 7. And the idea that Diana's willing to sacrifice herself is fine, but it still feels kind of odd that Diana's first big spotlight in DC Comics involves her no longer being a part of DC's primary universe.
Yeah, DC, way to go.
You know, I mean...
Telling a story about somebody by removing them from the story.
Yeah, I guess the best thing you can say is at least it wasn't a death story. It's not a story of her beyond the veil or becoming the Spectre like Hal Jordan did. But at the same time, I mean, considering how much Batman was in Dark Knight's Death Metal, couldn't Bruce Wayne take the temporary nap while Diana becomes the preeminent hero in DC for a while?
Do you want Bruce Wayne to become a god?
I would like him to become an afterthought, if you ask me.
I was going to answer about the same thing. DC is afraid to break away from Superman and Batman. It's even to Wonder Woman, even to give her spotlight.
Even though she's the only one that's been able to come out with her own movie in the last 12 months in their universes.
Yeah, okay, right?
And
just, I'm going to rant about this till the day I die because they will never change. And you know what? Because they cater to their fan base, it's their fan base that's the problem.
Well, I believe that's why Hippolyta is going to be a member of the Justice League in March, is because she's again, taking on the role of Ambassador to Man while Diana is unavailable. This might also explain why Yara Flor is going to rise in DC's Prime Universe post-Future State.
Which I'm okay with.
So am I. It just
somebody else being Wonder Woman.
Again, it feels like every time Diana has a central spotlight in DC, the next thing that happens is that she has to take a step back in some way or another.
Because they can't give a woman spotlight for more than a few minutes, because then the fanboys start whining.
I think the biggest problem is they don't know how to write for them properly.
That's true, too.
That's an additional problem. As a matter of fact, Diana, in her own series, just made a mistake that she's made several times before. Remember how I told you that her partnership with Maxwell Lord was breaking down?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Emma, Max's daughter, Liar, reappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And she and Diana started fighting again, where Diana wrapped her lasso of truth around her own arm so she wouldn't have the hallucinations that Emma's powers create.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result of being able to see through Emma's falsehood, she was able to see that Emma is not really a villain, but she's a person in a lot of pain. You know, her mother killed herself or at Emma's behest, but she also has a lot of father issues, and she just really needs someone to help her. So instead of sending her back to prison, Diana made Emma a guest in the Themyscirian Embassy. Which sounds all well and good, except Diana's done this with a number of different characters, and it never turns out well.
Uh-huh.
She consistently tries to help people by sending them to Themyscira, or some Themyscirian land or Amazon property in the world, but often those people tend to just accidentally or on purpose betray these individuals and turn out even more powerful or have more of a vendetta against Diana.
It feels like another Arkham.
Well, in this case, there's also the added problem of Maxwell Lord apparently, like, taking a backseat in Emma's brain while his body is comatose. So this whole thing smacks of, like, a disaster in the making. Beyond that, Superman recently got a new costume from an alien race. In Superman series, he's taken more of a cosmic role now that he has no secret identity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Honestly, the new outfit, I would really like to become the permanent outfit. However, I don't see it in any of the Infinite Frontier solicitations, so it's pretty obvious this is temporary. He got it after his own costume was damaged, and the gold pauldrons on his shoulders, it's freaking working for me.
You know, I like it.
It's bold.
I'm getting a strange Goku vibe out of it, surprisingly.
Not me, because it's not his hair. And the only major change is that gold harness around his chest and back. Everything else is classic Superman. And I look at this, and it's just like, that actually feels like something different. Just with the one addition. It's kind of freaky.
Yeah, I approve of this upgrade.
Like I said, though, unfortunately, I think it's temporary.
It's always temporary. Yeah. Nobody wants a costume change in DC this, fandom.
For those who are looking for it, this was in Superman issue number 28 by Brian Michael Bendis and Ivan Reis. You know, I would actually believe more of Clark Kent actually being one of the major superheroes in DC if he wore this outfit on a more consistent basis. I don't know why, but I always feel like the classic blue outfit, it feels like he's trying to hide in the background, but just can't do it because he keeps flying.
Yeah, and I'm just glad he got over the red underwear outside of the tights phase.
He has that in this image.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Yeah, he's still...
Sorry, I wasn't looking at his crotch, I was looking at his shoulders.
Oh, well, the unfortunate truth is the underwear disappeared during the New 52 era, and once the Rebirth era started, they put the briefs back. And I don't really know why, because the briefs worked okay in the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s. In the 90s, it felt kind of embarrassing. In the 2000s, I really questioned why it existed.
Because people don't like change.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of weird that you take away the briefs, and the whole thing becomes a much sleeker image in my mind.
Yeah. Why not just give him, like, red pants if you want the bottom part to have red on it? Do the bottom part red, the upper part leave it, and then add the gold. Boom, you're done.
Unfortunately, you just answer your own question. Change.
Oh, no. All the little fanboys are scared of change. They don't have their mommies to hold their hands.
Okay, easy. I'm only allowed so much sarcasm at one time. So, I did read Avengers number 40, the first issue of Enter the Phoenix. And, okay, so the storyline, as I understand it, is that the Phoenix entity was recently summoned to Earth because of the Fist of Khonshu event between the desires of Namor, who already possessed a part of the Phoenix Force previously, and the prayers of the Moon Knight, who was just begging for something to come along that gave him enough power to fight Khonshu directly. Mm-hmm. But after Moon Knight was done with it and released it, it started to nest itself in a volcano. And the Avengers tried to question it. They even had T'Challa plug his special Black Panther suit into the Celestial that makes up their base right now so they could speak to it directly, and it ignored them. But when several other people showed up, I believe it was Namor and the Defenders of the Deep showed up to fight their way to it so that Namor could possess what he called his Fiery Queen, which is creepy, mm-hmm. It woke up and it just kind of snatched a few people directly off the battlefield. And it turns out it didn't just take them. What it's doing is it discorporated all of them and has taken them inside itself as it's now flying actively around the world, waiting to see which of them is worthy to become the host of the Phoenix.
And oh, what so it... we're getting some kind of secret war kind of thing?
Yes, that's precisely what's happening. In the first issue, it took Captain America and Doctor Doom away from the group of individuals still inside it, and had it fight in a landscape that, again, is still somewhere within its frame. And the thing is, Doom, with the Phoenix, beat the snot out of Steve Rogers.
Huh. Not really surprised by that.
But Rogers kept getting up. You know that Captain America's big thing in Marvel Comics is indomitability. He will never quit fighting until he's unconscious.
And then yep. Some.
And in this case, because of the cosmic powers you're using, it's like Doom used the Phoenix Fire to completely destroy Roger's body, and the next thing he knew, he's being attacked by something that popped out of Roger's body. The original skinny Steve Rogers punched him in the face.
Oh, wow.
And then, using the powers of the Phoenix, you know, he sort of regenerated his super soldier self. So, Doom was watching this, and Captain America, even with the powers of the Phoenix, fighting Doom was outclassed. He was bloody, he was beaten, he even said the classic MCU line, "I can do this all day." And Doom was staring at him, and then he realized that although he could do amazing things with the power of the Phoenix, Doom is not the type of person he's looking for. He realized that this whole thing, even though they were fighting each other, wasn't a fight to the win. It was a fight to find out more about them as individuals. And Doom realized he can't match the kind of just freakish willpower and indomitability that Captain America has, so he yielded.
Huh.
Which it sounds strange for a supervillain to give up power, but if you don't know Dr. Doom, he's a pragmatic supervillain. He's not trying to rule the world. He's trying to rescue it.
Yeah, from itself sometimes.
Yeah, and Doom knows when he's in a fight that there's really no purpose in him being in. So, could he win it? Sure, but he wasn't what the Phoenix was looking for. So, when he yielded, Doom was teleported away, and Steve Rogers was sent back to this kind of empty void that has everyone else involved in this fight for the Phoenix Force.
Mm-hmm.
And the list of people involved is way more varied than we thought it was.
Really?
Yes. There are characters you will and will not recognize here. So you have Doom, who is obviously no longer a part of it, right?
Right.
Then you have Captain America, who we know is a part of it, and yes, when he was transported back to this space, his wounds were healed. He's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Also in this space is the Black Panther, Jennifer Walters, the She-Hulk, mm-hmm. Wolverine, Shang-Chi, and Namor. In addition to them is a current Marvel character, the American Eagle. The Orb, the person who stole one of Uatu's eyes, the Watcher, and embedded it in himself for cosmic sight. Yes. The Red Widow, the current leader of the Red Room in Marvel Comics, the training room that created the Black Widow. Dane Whitman, the Black Knight. The Swamp Thing. No, I'm sorry, not Swamp Thing, Man Thing. Echo, a daredevil, sometimes ally, sometimes a nemesis, who can recreate any move she sees.
Mm-hmm.
She's also a deaf Native American. Both the Nighthawk and the Hyperion from the Squadron Supreme, Marvel's wow. allegories to Superman and Batman. Shauna the She-Devil and her saber-toothed cat Zabu. Moon Knight and Devil Dinosaur. Or not Moon Knight, sorry, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Howard the Duck.
Okay.
Luke Cage. And Jane Foster as the Valkyrie.
Huh.
That is the entirety of the characters stuck in this null space right now. And there's still a few characters on this list I would not want to have the Phoenix Force. And there's a couple in here that are frankly terrifying to me. I couldn't imagine what Luke Cage would be like with the Phoenix Force. I can't imagine he's going to have it by the end of this. Top of my list to retain it afterwards, if I had a pick, I would say it's Valkyrie. She's the only one that would know how to use it properly, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it'd be kind of freaky to have a Valkyrie with power over both death and rebirth.
Yeah.
Howard the Duck? That's almost funny.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the ones that terrifies me the most is honestly Man-Thing. I mean, one of his natural powers is to make things burn at his touch if they feel fear.
Mm-hmm.
That combined with a Phoenix? No, sir. I don't need something telepathic that burns people with fear.
No, thank you. I choose life.
So, that's way more far-reaching than I was picturing from any of the solicits of the Enter the Phoenix story. Also, the fallout of post-X of Swords is happening in X-Men right now. And good news, Betsy Braddock is not dead.
Yay.
Yeah, I can't imagine she would be dead.
She is lost in the multiverse.
Hmm.
It's like
so
just
when... put her in a plot refrigerator?
No. We've seen her. We know where she is in the multiverse. The problem is, she doesn't know where she is. And Excalibur doesn't know where she is. Excalibur, and mind you, without Betsy, they lost two members recently, now that Apocalypse is gone with Amenth, right? So it's Richter, Gambit, Jubilee, and Rogue. So because X-Factor cannot confirm Betsy died based on the information, Rachel Summers suggested they go back to Avalon and find information, find any sort of proof that she's dead so they can actually do the resurrection process. And X Factor returned to Avalon, where Jamie Braddock is still king and Brian Braddock is still Captain Avalon. Turns out there's been another upgraded character, though. Brian's wife, Megan, now that she's in Otherworld, she is feeling magic to the nth degree.
So she's operating at full power now?
Like a power level she's never felt before.
Oh boy.
She's, and Megan is scary because she's not just Faye, she's also a mutant. I thought she was just one. So, she was able to lead them back to the spot of the duel. She felt like there was a pull back to the place where Betsy was shattered. And they attempted a pseudo-spell to bring Betsy back, and it didn't work. Unfortunately, when they summoned Betsy, they summoned all the Betsys. The Captain Britain Corps showed up there.
Oops.
Whoa.
And they agreed that Betsy is not dead, but their Captain Britain must be lost in the multiverse inhabited by one of the other Captain Britons. So they're going to start looking for her themselves. They have access to the universes. It turns out Betsy is lost in a universe where she's Queen of England.
I mean, I could think of worse things.
It's kind of awkward because she's also sharing her bed with someone.
Oh.
It's that universe's version of Warren Worthington III.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, and Betsy Braddock did date Archangel in the Prime Universe. However, that was when Archangel was blue, and that's when Betsy was in Quanon's body.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole thing is, like, high-level awkward. And she just woke up in this universe. She has no idea why she's there. She just knows she's somewhere she's not supposed to be with someone she's not sleeping with. So that's a positive. However, I did read the latest issue of X-Men, and there is going to be an X-Men team formed. There's a couple problems. First of all, they found out that Krakoa and Arako have changed so much in the centuries they were apart. They don't feel like joining right now.
Yeah, I would imagine they're not compatible.
It's deeper than that. Cypher says the two of them have spent so long apart, they're basically speaking different languages.
Hmm.
On top of which, the citizens of Arako do see the Krakoans and the X-Men as basically soft. So, first relations are chilly at best. And mind you, this is Xavier and Magneto trying to talk directly to Iska the Unbeaten, who apparently is now speaking on behalf of Arako. So, not great news, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, Cyclops and Jean Grey did meet with Xavier and Magneto afterwards in the Quiet Council Chamber. And, remember, as a result of X of Swords, there were two empty seats on the Quiet Council. Apocalypse right. was gone. Jean Grey gave hers up to lead to help lead the strike team that assisted the X-Men stuck in Otherworld at the end of X of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
So, Xavier and Magneto tell Cyclops and Jean Grey that they think they would both make perfect members of the council, and they think that they have the votes to force through an amendment so that Grey can retake her seat and Cyclops can take his. And both Grey and Cyclops politely declined.
I thought they would.
You know, Grey feels like she can do better for the world off the council, and Cyclops, you know Cyclops, he's a soldier. He doesn't feel like an administrator.
Yeah.
Here's where it gets different, though. They did not pick a team of X-Men. They have determined that they will lead a team, but they will not pick it. For the first time ever, because they feel that the X-Men, should, if they're going to be heroes in the world, they should represent the people of Krakoa, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, the people of Krakoa are going to be allowed to vote for who they want on this team.
Oh.
And I am intrigued by all the possibilities. According to the info dumps in the issue, the only people not eligible to be X-Men are people who are sitting on the Quiet Council. So that instantly means stalwart characters like Nightcrawler, Shadowcat, Emma Frost, and Kate Pryde cannot be members.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
That also means characters like Exodus, Sebastian Shaw, and Sinister cannot be X-Men.
Wow, that's kind of limiting the more well-known names, so now,
Well, that still leaves a ton of people on that island. Yeah. Even with all the books they put out right now, there are still several characters who don't have anything to do. And here's kind of the odd thing that I was thinking about. I was like, okay, so X-Men, we're going to have another Wolverine tale. Wait, Wolverine's never been popular. And I don't mean readers, I mean as far as an individual. He's not one of the most well-liked people in Marvel Comics.
No, he's not. He's ever refers to him as a, you know, a-hole, and he's okay with that.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about this, it's like, wow, did they find a reason to keep Wolverine off the X-Men? This is weird. So I'm actually intrigued by all the possibilities of who could be on this squad. I mean, if you think about it in terms of like a popularity contest on Krakoa, this is going to be really strange.
Yeah.
That might mean like some side characters who don't usually find themselves on the high end of power might be some of the more likely characters on this. Like Dazzler could end up on the team because a lot of people would be aware of her as a singer rather than a soldier.
True.
So, yeah, she's been developing a harder edge, last I checked.
She has been, but who knows where writers have taken it now that in this Krakoan era. I really haven't seen her since the end of the Dawn of X miniseries when they had the celebration for the return of the X-Men on the island.
I don't think Magic will probably be a candidate, too, because everyone's afraid of her.
Yeah, people are terrified of her. She would never be on this team. You know,
that's
kind of
fascinating.
That's what I thought. When I read about it, I'm just like, oh, they're going to vote? Oh, that... Wait. This is weird. Mm-hmm. So it brings up a lot of intriguing possibilities. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact she's on the council, I would almost say Mystique could actually cajole her way into being one if she wanted to.
Yeah, but it's fascinating now. The writers have a heads up on this, but it's going to make a lot of the readers kind of look into the characters and their choices and who they choose.
Yeah, but I mean, this could actually bring up a team of X-Men who, for the most part, are not the usual like dozen names that often come up over and over again. I mean, if you think about it, in this case, Blob could even make it onto the X-Men because he's the bartender for most of the island right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Last time anyone remembers about him, other than being depowered, was Terrorist?
Yeah. Yeah, and I've seen him in a number of issues as a side character, and he's been pretty chill lately. He's just been talking with people over drinks.
I would love to see that, to be honest.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to finding out who's going to be on this squad, just in what reasons they have for putting them on this team. Outside that, a lot of the X-Men series have restarted, or not restarted, continued post-X of Swords, and there have been some developments, but not a lot of finite things lately. I'm trying to think what else, because I've been reading Batman comics, and I didn't like where they ended things just ahead of Endless Winter. Mm-hmm. It really felt like they installed as much of the status quo as they could, minus Bruce Wayne's billions. Haven't really been reading most of DC Comics outside of that. Suicide Squad ended, so unfortunately I don't have that anymore. And the fourth issue of We Only Find Them When They're Dead did come out.
Oh yeah, that was another good one.
Yeah, that for me, that was terrifyingly good, and it's still a very sad series, and I'm starting to wonder if it's a mini-series, frankly. It feels like they're building to a quick crescendo here.
Mm-hmm.
The next issue is going to be very telling. The fifth one's going to really give me a place to figure out where it's headed. Were there any series you guys just looked at and said, nope, not for me?
Anything dealing with the bat?
Dark Knight's Metal?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dark Knight's Death Metal, I've been trying, but the best I can do is flip through it and get the gist. It's very difficult for me to sit down to read. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's a case of it wasn't written for me, it's written for somebody with a lot of DC knowledge, or if... to me, it's not well written. And I say to me because I cannot say what everyone will like. I can only say what I do and do not like, personally. And Death Metal is definitely on the do not like list.
I'm trying to just recall what we've read all this year, because there are some titles I can name right off the bat as like being kind of awful, but I'm not sure if it's one we read this year.
What are you thinking of?
Mira. But I think that was last year.
No, I think we read that this year.
Yeah.
That feels relatively recent.
That was a missed opportunity or mislabeled.
Yeah, that was very disappointing.
It was the Mira story without Mira in it.
Yeah.
Go DC.
Well, I mean, Marvel did the same thing with the Shuri series. She spent so long, like, looking for Black Panther in his issues, she never really felt like she had her own reason to do things.
Did we read Naomi?
Stop.
Did we read Naomi this year?
No, we read Naomi last year. That was a solid new character.
Yes.
But, you know, unfortunately, what I feared came to pass, in that just after that miniseries ended, Naomi kind of ran face first into the rest of the DC Universe. They didn't spend enough time developing the character to make sure that it's something a lot of people would be looking for before they just threw her in the deep end. And now here we sit, like, what, a year and a half later, and now she's a member of the Justice League.
Well, good or worse, you gotta relegate her to the Teen Titans.
I suppose.
I don't mean that.
No, wait, she was on No, wait, she was on Young Justice, so yeah, they did do that.
Oh, okay. Well.
So, one of the things I read about, but I haven't really read myself, is that, Star Wars comics have a new cyborg Imperial general that sounds like she's going to be a major threat.
No, she's going to be a general threat, not a major.
Okay, you're fired.
Hey, I still salute when someone says general or major, and I said major whatever, major pain, major general idea. I blame How I Met Your Mother, but my sister does it too.
Well, the character debuted in Star Wars Adventure Smuggler's Run number 1. It was written by Greg Rucka with Alex Worley. Mm-hmm. The character is named Alessia Beck. Mm-hmm. She's from the Imperial Intelligence Bureau. And her design is... I don't even know how to say it. It's very... It's almost what you would expect from a fascist female character in just about any comic series. You know, bright white uniform like General Thrawn, short cropped black hair, singular cyborg orb eye, and it looks like she got into a fight to get it. I don't think that was a voluntary thing.
I was going to say probably some sort of scar, very stern look, very harsh haircut.
Yeah, she has a harsh mission too. As one of the directors of Imperial Intelligence, in her first appearance, she's tasked with hunting down Shrikes. They're a covert recon group for the Rebel Alliance that scout new locations for bases. So, if she manages to remove them, that means a lot of the forward operating possibilities of the Rebellion end right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Continue.
The Shrikes also are the ones who plan escape routes and rally points.
Mm-hmm.
At the top of her list for capture is Kaluan Emmott, who is the leader of the Shrikes, who holds not just base locations, but the locations of other resources that the Rebels use.
Ew.
So, Beck sounds like one of those characters who's both driven and purposeful. I guess my only question is she like the usual high-level Imperials that every time you sneeze the wrong way, they just cut your throat and ask the next guy to do your job?
I don't know, do you read your text and hear a German voice?
No.
I was thinking Russian, but yeah.
Russian or German.
No, if I had to cast her in real life, I'd say she's Lena Headley.
Yugoslavian.
There we go.
Apparently,
one of those Balkan states.
Yeah, apparently she commands a ship called the Vehement.
Hmm.
I don't know if she's going to become a major force, only because Disney right now seems to be on a huge Star Wars kick.
General.
Excuse me?
Nothing, I was just whispering she's a general.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out if she's going to appear in the live-action stuff now that they've announced 10 new series.
That would be cool, and there's a lot of room for it, because there's... How many new shows?
Star Wars-based? There were technically 10 announced, even though there were 11 of them. The new Book of Boba Fett was a secret they held until they debuted it in the cameo at the end of the Mandalorian season.
Oh, man. I was spazzing out. I was so excited.
I wasn't that excited because I already feel like we got the coolest Mandalorian. I don't need to see the dad again.
Estranged uncle.
But it does occur to me, though, that because they've hinted that in Ahsoka's series she's going to be hunting General Thrawn, characters like Alessia Beck could still be alive.
It's true. That would be a fun thing.
In all honesty, if they could show her anywhere, probably in the... that one show before that prequels, Rogue One.
What, the Rangers?
No, not the Rangers.
Rebels?
No, not Rebels. It's following the name character from Rogue One.
Jyn Erso? Oh, no. Oh, Cassian Andor.
Cassian.
That's right. He's getting a series as well. But I guess she could appear in the Ahsoka series because she's an intelligence officer and Thrawn was a very intelligence-driven character.
She could probably appear a little bit in all of them, kind of binding them together, like the Force.
Conceivably. Speaking of which, there's another character that could appear in some of these series, considering the time frame.
Besides Thrawn?
Besides Thrawn and Beck, we might actually see the rise of what's-her-name from the sequel series.
Rey?
No, the one in the silver armor.
Captain Phasma.
Yes. She was massively underserved in those films.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and if you read the book, I don't even want to go there. Like, the book does explain, but also disappoints. Like, I would rather assume she was, like, this militant, diehard, awesome person, but in reality, she's just an opportunist, a survivor at all cost, and she doesn't have loyalty to anybody, not even her own people, some of whom she murdered.
What was the armor made of? Because now, in retrospect, I think it's Beskar, or it looks like Beskar.
It is not.
I heard that was made from the hull of the ship they used in Episode 1.
Yeah, the Naboo freighter, or the Naboo...
Or light cruiser?
Cruiser.
That thing looked delicate as all heck.
No,
it's supposed to be, like, very good against energy weapons.
Yeah.
Huh.
Very reflective.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not Beskar, but it's, like, shiny.
Yeah, one other thing I wanted to mention before we go our separate ways for a week is that I did watch Wonder Woman 84 the day after Christmas.
I knew you were going to bring this up, and I did. I watched it New Year's Eve.
Okay, what did you think of it?
Overall, I was disappointed. And I didn't have, like, crazy high hopes about it. And you know me, I'm a Wonder Woman fan.
Yeah. That's why I brought it up. I didn't bring it up for a slam fest. I brought it up because I'd be curious if you watched it, what do you think of it?
Okay, so, and I also think that watching it on a TV screen through the app wasn't as good as, you know, watching it in a movie theater. I would have been maybe more focused, more enthralled with the story. So it had several plot holes. It had really unrealistic motivations for the villain.
Okay.
Who Pedro Pascal played a really good villain. Seeing him, like, emote at all after seeing him not emote at all in The Mandalorian, he's such a dynamic actor anyway.
I've seen him in a bunch of projects. He's a great actor. I don't think he was well directed in Wonder Woman 84.
Yeah. He didn't really come off as a true villain. He reminded me of somebody that you'd see in, like, Scooby-Doo.
That's one of the problems I had, was that by the end of it, he was so reticent that he wasn't really a villain. He was just a sad, sad man.
Uh-huh.
Who'd he play?
Maxwell Lord.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I thought.
But he wasn't like the comic book Maxwell Lord. See, his powers had to do with a wishing stone he absorbed, so... He wasn't telepathic. He was just granting wishes and then taking things from people in return, whether they be metaphorical or physical or roles or something.
It made very little sense. Like, if you didn't know Maxwell Lord's power story, anything like that, it might have been okay, except there are so many plot holes. Where do I begin?
I think they should have replaced the character of Maxwell Lord with Felix Faust in this film. That would have helped quite a bit.
That would have been a simple fix. However, creating and just pulling up new powers out of nowhere. First of all, she's not Spider-Man. She's not Tarzan. Why are we having her swing from her lasso? You can't lasso a cloud. Maybe lightning, and then I had the song Ride the Lightning stuck in my head.
You know that.
Well, there have been a lot of mythologies that allowed for that, including some American mythologies.
Yes, Jesse, and no.
Jesse, have you watched the film?
I wasn't going to pay for another service to watch it.
Okay, see, that's where kind of the problem comes in, is that when you watch the film, Joanna's right. Diana just kind of developed two new powers within minutes of the need of these things. There wasn't any real build-up to it.
And I'm calling BS on the invisible jet thing. Like, that was That was shoehorned in there, and I'm not okay with that. Like, what the heck? Invisibility shield?
There is no need for the invisibility shield.
Okay, well, let's back up, because Jesse doesn't know the details of what we're talking about. Okay, so, Jesse, when... First of all, Steve Trevor was wishbacked in this time period because Diana accidentally used this wishstone thing. And when she needed to get somewhere quick, Steve reminded her that he was a pilot. So somehow they broke into the Smithsonian, and instead of stealing something he was familiar with, they stole a what appeared to be...
Modern jet.
Yeah, looked like a MiG fighter from the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And he managed to power this thing up relatively quickly and seemed to be very familiar with the avionics of a jet plane, which I remind you, he'd never seen before. He died in World War I in this story.
I'm calling BS about it.
So as they're getting ready to take off, the Smithsonian people are somehow aware that something is on their airfield getting ready to take off. They're driving cars to intercept it. And Diana tells Steve about radar. Apparently he knows about jet avionics but is unaware of radar. And So now that he's aware of this, he doesn't know how to hide from it, and Diana explains that her father Zeus had hit Themyscira, and she had been experimenting with how to hide things with mystical powers, and then she somehow just kind of concentrated hard enough until she could envelop the plane with an invisibility field she can't turn off.
Yeah, because now we're in Fantastic Four, and she can just create, like, a bubble of invisibility, but not really.
Yeah.
Just, you know, out of nowhere.
Some of the DC anime movies had a better explanation for the invisible jet.
Well, not even that, though. I mean, Steve had... Okay, so somehow Steve knew how to fly a jet, but when fireworks were going off near this plane as they were taking off, he didn't know what that was, even though fireworks were invented well before World War One.
Thank you. The Chinese had them.
It was very bizarre. And the other power she developed, flight, wasn't really from anything coherent. During their flight, Steve mentioned that flight is pretty simple. It's just a matter of catching the wind, lift, and thrust. And somehow...
I'm one with the air, man.
Yeah, and somehow Diana took from that conversation that she remembered two-thirds of the way through the film, took a giant leap, and just kind of started to float in the air. It wasn't really anything coherent.
Work with the human body.
Exactly. Well, she's not human. But
she's not human, but it also...
She has a human-shaped body. It's the same idea.
Yes, but it also didn't look like... She didn't put any effort into it. She just kind of started to glide after she hooked the back of a jetliner and dragged herself behind it for a bit.
Yeah. And her hair was perfect, and I hate her for that. But, no. But the fact that she was making big leaps in the other movie... Kind of like not flying.
Yeah.
In this one, she was just falling with style, as we're going to paraphrase from Buzz Lightyear.
It was really hard to buy.
It had no sense whatsoever. And I would believe that maybe she wished she could fly from this stupid stone, and boom, she has a stone. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
There are too many conveniences and too much fan pandering.
And it wasn't even like an explanation. There was no explanation. It was just like, we're supposed to accept this? Come on, DC.
Yeah, and
I have a brain.
Well, technically, this wasn't DC. This was Warner Brothers.
Okay.
But at the same time, the story of Steve Trevor and how he got back was so weird, because Diana accidentally made a wish to bring him back, but he wasn't back. It was his soul in another man's body.
Yeah, so he was essentially possessing this guy, and it was split between her seeing Christopher Pine...
They tried to copy what Steve Rogers did with the Cosmic Suit to get Bucky back, but tried to do it differently?
No, it's worse than you think, it was this man's body. So to the rest of the world, it was this man, but basically Diana's love for Steve Trevor just made her see Steve Trevor.
And once he said the few lines like from the end of the movie, he handed her a watch, you know, save time, whatever, save the world.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my gosh, it is you! Because this guy was following her around a party, and she's like, no, I don't know you. She's like, yes. He's like, yes, you do. And then, poof, she sees him as just Steve Trevor, but
he
woke up in someone else's life.
Right, but he doesn't actually have Steve Trevor's face. This is just her heart giving her eyes a different image. And mind you, the same night he reappeared, she slept with him, which means she didn't sleep with Steve Trevor. She slept with this guy, Steve Trevor's inhabiting.
Yeah. Weird.
Which is just awkward beyond awkward. And there was no moral question about this. Nobody talked about the fact that he had taken over or even taken someone's life at this point. That conversation never came up.
No explanation of does this guy not remember? Does he have amnesia? Did he run into people he knows? Like, neighbors in this apartment building.
Was Steve Trevor's character necessary for the story?
Not in the least. As a matter of fact, the only reason he was around was to temporarily depower Diana to make it harder for her to deal with most of the film.
And a distraction, and the, oh no, I can't defeat this guy, because if I defeat him, you go away, and you're my boyfriend.
Yeah. Who wrote those story? Because they're terrible.
I don't remember. I mean, the way it's written, Diana has made no friends, no personal relationships, no new interests of any sort since World War I. And mind you, this is set in 1984.
Yeah. Absolutely bonkers. And she has all the social graces, which a shut-in would not have.
Yeah. And speaking of which, the other villain in the film, the cheetah. Oh, dude.
Okay, first of all, let me just interject here. Sif is a big fan. Okay. She was like wide-eyed and staring at the screen the entire time Cheetah was on. I think she has a hero now.
Okay, well, you know what? Cheetah, not a great villain. Pretty good Thundercat, but not a good villain.
I was just going to say, I was getting Thundercat vibes majorly.
Yeah, and it wasn't even good for her because in this version, Barbara Minerva herself wasn't a villain. She unfortunately grabbed the stone and wished she could be a lot like Diana, and she didn't know that wish was going to create Amazon strength, but somehow it cost her compassion, which was...
And her refrigerator.
Yeah. And believe it or not, I mean, she... Somehow all this made her start to dress in this very, like, 80s punk fashion, and the fact that she was fighting in heels is one of those... It's one of those pet peeves of mine when it comes to women in comic books or movies.
Thank you. Also one of mine.
And on
Being
top
a woman
of...
woman and hating heels.
Yeah, on top of which, later on, Maxwell Lord started to make a bunch of wishes, and the cost was that he was giving Barbara, like, extra strength and extra vitality and extra speed, and somehow all this created the side effect of turning her into a cat person. There was really no explanation behind this.
She did wish to be an apex predator.
Yeah, but how does that translate into Maxwell Lord giving her this stuff?
I don't know. But also, if she wanted to be more like Diana, A, she would be more compassionate because she is full of compassion.
Yeah.
And she knows that because she spent time with Diana.
Yeah.
Hello.
And
it made
sounds like they
so
took
little
two,
sense.
Two different story ideas and just made one plot of them to link them together.
You know what? So, that wasn't even the worst crime of this film, in my opinion. The absolute worst, and a lot of what we said is not positives in my mind, is that they took such a powerful character, and all of the action scenes were floaty.
Yep.
They had no impact to it. A lot of it was characters swinging off things, swinging around things, jumping around things.
Tarzan.
Yeah, there was only one scene of real power where she's pushing a large truck as a shield while she's running behind other trucks, and she's catching them, which is impressive, but she's pushing it with its wheels dragging on the ground. I'm surprised she wasn't just rolling it like a log as she was running.
And, of course, this in the movie took great effort when I know that her power level, it wouldn't have made her break a sweat. And I do know that she was being kind of powered down at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Just it as Cheetah's power grew, her power declined. And let's talk about the horrible use of the Kingdom Come armor. This is a whole separate rant. So, originally...
The armor that I was shown in the trailers, I think, that is awful. I Googled the Kingdom Come armor. It's like, that's awesome. This is awful.
Yes. Agreed on both points.
Visually.
This is
I never saw it in action.
The Kingdom Come armor, it is, but it isn't. We all know it as, you know. Anyway, those who know, know.
Yeah.
This is apparently this a legendary warrior from Themyscira who held off all the ranks of men so that the Amazons could retreat to Themyscira, and she's considered dead or, you know, missing in action, whatever.
Yeah, Diana was looking for her and only found the armor.
Right, exactly. Which she just happened to have and perfectly polished.
Yeah, it wasn't
she
surprisingly
it for
good
like
condition.
5 minutes, and then ditches the wings, does almost nothing with it, when she's supposed to be powered down. Now, the source of the power is not the armor. It was her abilities,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Power within
so
arcade.
Diana was powered down, had this armor that didn't actually give her any... Well,
no, by this time she was powered back up because she dispelled her wish. She sent Steve away, so her powers were back.
That's... Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, she was gliding because of the wings. Hey, cool. That made sense that she could fly that way. Okay, there we go. One thing that made sense. I was so disappointed. Like, I was ridiculously excited when I saw a hint of it in the very first trailer that came out. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's the Kingdom Come Arbor. This is going to be so cool. No, I shouldn't have gotten my hopes up, but I did. And that was on me. I will...
This movie was basically a whole list of missed opportunities.
So many. And blunders of what they had in front of them.
Well, I was given just... what you've told me right now, and thinking about, I could try to write something way better than this.
Do it.
Let me put you this way, Jesse. You remember how I am definitely not a fan of the first Wonder Woman film?
I thought it was passable. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was
passable
and leagues better than any DC movie that came out thus far.
Okay, I think the
this
first
was so bad.
I think the first Wonder Woman movie is mechanically clumsy. I think they make a lot of missteps, but it was nowhere near as obvious as the second film. The first movie is a joy compared to this.
Yes. I was a fan of the first one for many reasons. Not just I'm not a blind Wonder Woman fan. I can call this one out for what it is. It was just painful, and it made me so pissed off. And they did announce that they're making it a trilogy.
Yeah, they're fast-tracking a third one.
Okay, so I'm hoping that this is one of those anomalies that most trilogies experience, where the first one's amazing, they make a second one, it sucks, and the third one closes it off like, okay, that was better than the second one.
That's still a bad trilogy.
Jesse?
To the example of Back to the Future.
Jesse, this was 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
This was way too long. There were several points where I didn't know why it needed to do this.
Well, I'm glad I didn't take up their 2-week free offer to watch it.
No, dude, the best character in it, it's kind of a tie between Barbara Minerva. Kristen Wiig acted her butt off, even though it was a terrible role.
Yeah.
No, I have no problem with her acting. I find that most comedians can act pretty damn well.
Here's the odd part, though. For me, in my mind, the list of best characters in this movie is a tie between Barbara Minerva and the bizarre man who claimed to have Mayan descent that they went to for mythological information. And he was in one scene, and somehow he made me giggle, and I don't know why.
So, like the soldier she was hanging out with in the first movie, who had, like...
No, this dude was, like, an 80s hippie, dude.
No, not
I mean,
Native American.
Yeah, this guy was... He
character.
Yeah, he said he was of Mayan descent, but he's, like, one of those people that say, dude, I'm Native American. You know you're Lily White? Yeah, but I'm Native American.
Or, dude, I'm totally Viking, when it's like, no, you're just a white supremacist. There's a difference.
I don't know,
there's
I think Pedro Pascal could have passed better for being Aztec or whatever.
No, Mayan. I mean, right? There was only one moment in the movie where I sat up, and that was the mid-credit scene when...
Yes.
When Linda Carter showed up, that made me go, "Oh my God, this is amazing!"
The cameo we got you a standing
ovation.
Dude, the cameo was great. It actually had it was colorful, it was well timed, it was well acted. People stayed out of each other's way.
Yeah.
And it was kind of amazing that this one like 3-minute bubble was the only fun part of the movie.
I, of course, nostalgia, because Linda Carter has a special place in my heart.
See, Jesse, to let you know, when Diana said she was looking for a legendary warrior and only found her armor, Linda Carter was that warrior.
Yeah.
Okay, nice, that's nice.
That was nice. Exactly. And I saw people on the net who just said, great, there's going to be a third one, maybe that means Linda Carter can be in it. And my first thought is, no, keep her far away from this. She does not deserve that.
I've met her in person and seen her in concert. I'm good. I do still admire her in many ways, but I don't know if she was drunk or maybe on something, like med-wise. Mm. Like, she was not how I anticipated.
I'll be honest.
How they say, never meet your heroes.
No, I've met her. She was very nice when I met her, but then again...
she's very nice.
She
lived... Very outgoing, very big personality.
Specifically I live, she lives somewhere in my neighborhood. I saw her at my local bowling alley.
What?
Yeah.
I need you
she's
to become
kill you,
very...
Man. She's
very,
gonna kill you.
I need you to
she
be
was,
very, very into bowling for me.
She was
like,
very nice. She was there with John Tesh. They were both very kind people, and even though I was kind of geeking a little bit, she just kind of looked at me and smiled and just, she was very nice about me being a goober. Really nice.
Yes, so. and she saw a lot of them because I did a photo with her, a photo op, mm-hmm. after the concert where she was just singing and like, you know, telling some of her memoirs. Fun stories, by the way, really interesting stories.
Okay.
But, you know, singing, it was like jazz lounge music, you know, mm-hmm. not my usual, but like she definitely has a great voice.
All right. Let Jesse finish his thoughts so we can get out of here. We've been recording a while.
Sure.
I'll be honest. If they do a third Wonder Woman movie, get the guy that did Atomic Blonde.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the director, but at least the choreographer, the fight choreographer.
Yeah, totally. Oh, yeah. Choreographer.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Please and thank you. Dear Patty Jenkins, please.
Or
please give us a good third.
I think she's doing Rogue Squadron now.
She is.
No, she's. I thought she was confirmed for the third Wonder Woman also.
Well, they picked up the option on her contract, but she already signed the new contract to do Rogue Squadron. So in order of projects that she's been signed for, Rogue Squadron is higher.
That's fine. I mean, I like her previous work.
And it's just combined two loves of hers, and that's fighter pilots and Star Wars, apparently.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, no guarantee.
Apparently an army brat.
No guarantee still it comes out, but we'll just have to wait. So thank you for tuning in. You know, I apologize if you guys missed us, but it was the holidays and a lot of us had things that we could not escape. So we are back now, and next week we will be reading volume one of Image Comics' Bitterroot. I've been curious to try this for a while just because it's way outside the norm at the very least. You know, steampunk in Harlem sounds like fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm just glad to be back. I enjoy talking the comics and genre with you guys.
Me too.
All right. Well, thank you very much for tuning in. I hope your holiday is well, and please stay safe out there. You know, the vaccine is rolling out way slower than it should, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't still take precautions. So thanks again. Have a great one. I am Jeremy.
I'm Joanna.
I'm Jesse.
The Cosmic Library is now closed.